Good evening, I want to call to order this meeting of the planning commission for March 22nd, 2017. My name is John Devados, I serve as the chair. This evening, we have all commissioners present and attending. We also have our liaison, Mayor Stokes, I believe he's just stepping in. Our first item is the agenda approval. Do we have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Mr. Chair, if I could make a suggestion for the agenda change, just looking through here, I'd like to make a friendly motion to move the draft minutes revision of January 25th and February 8th to the portion after public comment and prior to the study session. Some of these minutes, many of us have reviewed before, we should be able to go through quickly, and that way, moving into April, we at least have January and early February posted in the next week to our website. So I would offer up that friendly motion.
That should make Mr. Cohen very happy. But do we have a second?
I accept the friendly amendment.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes.
Thank you.
The first item is City Council communications. We will wait on our mayor. But I believe we have presentations from, if you would, Mr. Cohen.
Yes, thank you, Chair Davidos. I'd like to introduce Mr. Eric Sin, who is chair of the Parks and Community Services Board. He would like to address the commission.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Eric Sin, and actually, just to make one clarification, I am not the chair of the Parks Board. That is actually a man named Stuart Heath. I am a current active member of the Parks and Community Services Board. And first, I want to thank you for having me here. The purpose for my presentation today, and it's actually just more commentary to provide an opinion from the board itself, is on the code that we were actually talking about. On March 14th, we were presented given a presentation by city staff on the land use code. And we were asked one simple question, whether or not the current version of, or the amended version, proposed version of the code will actually meet Bellevue's needs for parks and community services. And based upon discussion around a number of different points, we came together as a board and stated that it does not. And so we were asked and we offered to actually come in person and provide those reasons and actually answer any questions that you had as a board in regards to our opinion and basically also move forward with next steps. One of them being just an open invitation for anyone here to actually come and join us during our meetings, which are on the second Tuesdays of every month.
Thank you. Would you, so is the intent to walk through the list of items that you have?
The intent is that to make any clarifications that you would actually need. So primarily we were actually presented the land use and the incentive code that was actually part of the discussion. And going through the fundamentals of that particular statute and understanding what the components were and the historical facts around it, we realized that there were certain things that do come out clearly as being either lacking or in some ways arguably detrimental to the park system.
I think we have some questions. Commissioner Clayson and then Commissioner Edwards next.
Two-word question.
How come?
I can actually give a couple examples. And then basically in regards to time, as well as basically I'm sure there are a number of other people behind me, I would actually ask that if there are further discussions around this, that we actually use it as a board. Two primary reasons that came into discussion were, one, that the proposed code does not do enough to ensure that additional parkland will actually come through developments within the near future. And number two is that the incentive system historically has actually I wouldn't say fail, but basically the options that have actually been presented to builders primarily have been passed over. There are clear examples where if we were to consider future development, for example, PETs, basically the current proposal actually has, I don't know what you would term it, PET amenities or built-in PET call, basically as part of the incentive system. However, understanding that within Bellevue, we actually have Downtown Park, Ashwood Park, Waterfront, a number of parks that can currently sustain the population, human and animal. However, with the proposed growth projections that were shared to us by the city, it becomes very clear that the current park resources that we have would not actually be able to sustain the increased population and the ask them.
So first of all, thank you as a fellow volunteer in the city of Bellevue. I think it's awesome that one of our fellow boards has come and, you know, has some feedback on something that I think we all agree is critical and something that a lot of our citizens say is very important to them is the parks land here in Bellevue. I would ask, I think we're very interested in what you believe is falling short. Would it be possible at your next board meeting that you take the board and could you detail and provide potential a written synopsis of where you believe we're falling short? I think it would help us understand either which codes we need to look at, where you think we don't have enough parks land. Something more written from the board might actually be more viable and it would help us better understand what changes we can make on this end.
Of course. I think basically one of the options, one of the outcomes that we had as a board was to actually work with you moving forward. So if there are certain call to actions that we can actually help provide that clarify our stance, and that basically kind of make sure that there is a particular process that can be followed moving forward, we'd be happy to do it.
Again, just like Michelle, thank you for your service and coming here and sharing your concerns and comments with us.
Of course.
I'd like to add to what Michelle said, in addition to clarifying, can you also provide ideas on how you think this could be addressed, the amendment system, for example?
The one I personally could provide an idea. However, I am basically just one member of a very talented group of people that actually have a very wide and broad range of ideas and basically backgrounds. If it were asked to me, one of the possible benefits within the incentive system is understanding or defining substance. I believe there is actually one part of the code that carries value if you have a particular square footage of open space that you develop within your building projects. I believe it's a 3,000 square foot minimum, 10%, something to that, those numbers. However, what is not defined there is actually the actual aspects of what define that space. So is it something that's sustainable to the community? Is it, would it be considered a definition or an ancillary definition of an open space? Or is it just basically landscaping that actually makes or benefits the developer, that 3,000 square foot, whether or not it's actually comprised of certain planters, cement, but basically those particular planters of cement are actually near an open road, access point, egress point, things that basically the community would not be able to actually utilize. To be fair, there are a number of projects that were actually presented to us by city staff that actually have very good examples of open space that are part of the buildings itself, but actually allow the community to take these. So that would be one example.
Well, I wasn't posing that question to you specifically. I was hoping to get something from the Parks Commission. When you have that, whatever you come up in writing, in addition to clarification, also proposed ideas.
We can definitely do that.
As a board, thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions? So if I can make one request, again, I want to thank you for being here, taking the time. If you could perhaps give us also a one-page summary of the key things you would like us to focus on as a commission, I think it would help us focus. The risk we run with a long document is we might get lost in the weeds. So that would be my request.
Sure. I will actually do my best to carry that forward to the other board. One action that I would like to ask of the board here is that basically if it's possible for you, John, and for Stuart to actually meet at some point or actually have a conversation to understand how best that process works for us to go together. And if it's a simple one-pager that would actually provide our objectives and our viewpoint, great.
Great.
If it's actually something that is actually might be more kind of group-based or actually a discussion of ideas, then maybe I can do that as well.
Certainly. I'm available and certainly very open to meeting up. Perfect. And so again, thank you for taking the time.
Appreciate of course. It. Thank you for having me.
I believe we have Ms. Summer from the East Bellevue Community Council.
Well, I don't have any prepared remarks, but I appreciate the calling on.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair.
We will go back to our mayor for City Council communications.
Yeah, several things. One, as you know by now, we have appointed our seventh board member, council member, board here, Ernie Stemus. Ernie has been involved actually in the downtown livability as the co-chair with Commissioner Lang, and is up to speed on this to a great extent. He's also on the Transportation Commission for a long time and chair. Been very involved in the city, so at least has that kind of hitting the ground running on that, and we'll be briefing him on this. So we're very glad to have gotten that process underway and taken care of, and really appreciated all the people who were interested. It was amazing with like some 43 people who had applied and 8 finalists, and it was a good process, and I think we're looking forward to moving along, and this will help us and getting this work done. It's kind of interesting with this parks, which was brought up. I'd be interested in seeing and knowing more about what, why it got to this point, why particularly these issues are coming up at this time. I mean, we've been working on this for a long time. And so I know that's not something you can answer, but I'd like to talk to the staff to see, well, how that got set up. And if we move forward, if there are any meetings to be held, again, that's something we need to work together on, because again, you have a lot of work to do, but so adding on to something else is kind of raises some questions. We want to see how they can work. Again, I had not heard about this, and it hasn't been discussed at all with the council, or not sure with staff as to what was going on and the involvement of the Parks Board at this point. But, it could be a good part of the process. Just want to make sure it fits in and we don't get diverted on something that takes too much time. The other thing I wanted to emphasize is that, this has been a process that's gone on for a long time. When we first put this in place, we were thinking maybe a couple of years we get this done. It's grown some. And as usually, things take a lot of time. And tonight, we're going to have staff will present the process for moving forward. The goal is to, on May 24th, have a review of the recommendation transmittal, and in June, have it to council. And that's a pretty firm commitment, and that's the expectation that we can get through these, which means that, to go back to your chair's comments in the meeting last time and looking at this, is what we need to focus on right now are the big rocks. Tonight we're going to talk about some of the more straightforward, smaller pieces, get those done, and then really concentrate on the big issues that come up. We need to move past the time where it's we don't want to get into this analysis paralysis thing on it. These things could take forever. There are always new things to work on. But if we can really focus, spend this time, it may take some extra meetings, but get it done, because the council needs to get it and start working on it and to get it moving forward. So And we can, you know, we'll communicate on that, and you and Stephanie and I can meet and talk about the staff about how it's going along each way. But just everybody keep that in mind, and we really want to reach the goal and not get bogged down in too much wordsmithing or line by line or things that are not as the big pieces. Get the big pieces solved, and then the other things will really kind of fall into place. And so I think we had a great meeting last time, a lot of comment from the public, a lot of things to work on, and we're getting close to the goal, and so just keep working hard at it, and really appreciate everybody's work. It's a lot to call on to ask you to make this sprint, but that's what we're here for, is to get this thing done and get it out in the public and start actually putting things in place instead of talking about it. So.
We're almost there. Thank you.
Right. Thank you very much.
By the way, on the big rocks, I know I got the rock from Jack.
I thought you took it back.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I could just heartily endorse everything that Mayor Stokes had to say. It's been almost 20 meetings and a whole lot of reading in between.
Right.
And frankly, I think, just speaking for myself, that we're ready to move forward, and I don't think it's going to take nearly as much time as people think at this point. We've been able to distill it so much.
That's great. Okay.
Thank you. Moving on, so we have the staff reports. Over to you, Mr. Butler.
All right, then. Thank you, Chair Davidos. Just two things. First one is in your desk packet correspondence, there is an email there from Michelle Herman. It came with an attachment, but that attachment's 143 pages long. It's a marked-up copy of the draft code. But you did get an electronic version, which I sent out to you this afternoon. But I did not print that one up. That's just an FYI. On a completely different note, I have some good news. I'm excited to announce that we do have a new senior planner on board with Planning and Community Development. It's been a long search to replace Erica Rapp, who left about a year ago. And I just wanted to take a moment to introduce Deborah Munkberg, if she could come up, please. Deborah is a certified planner with extensive experience in the planning field. She most recently was a principal in Three Square Blocks, a well-regarded consulting firm with experience throughout the Puget Sound region. Deborah has both private and public sector experience. She's worked for the City of Bellevue many moons ago in the Parks Department. Her specialties include comprehensive planning, neighborhood planning, community engagement, and environmental review. She's currently assisting us on the city's affordable housing strategy, and she's expected to be working on the multi-year neighborhood area planning project. And we've got her on some other department work priorities. So you will be seeing her. And I just wanted her to be able, you could put a face to her, and she could put a face to the Planning Commission. Deborah, if you could state your name and address for the record, please.
You almost did.
That's just kind of
Thank you, Terry. I just wanted to thank you. I've been here about a month now. I feel really welcomed, and I'm really excited and looking forward to working with you all in the future.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Where are you from, Deborah?
My last employment was with a small planning consulting firm that I and four other principals ran, and I specifically worked with primarily with public sector agencies, and in fact, most recently with Bellevue, I worked on the SEPA for the comprehensive plan update here, and the SEPA for the livability ordinance.
You live here in Bellevue?
I don't. I live just a couple miles north of Bellevue in Kirkland, south part of Kirkland. So very close. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. Chairman, that concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Cullen. We move on to public comment. I believe we have signed the list, is that right?
Oh, yes, excuse me. Also, we need to make a notation about the public comment.
So since we had a hearing last time on livability, if you have a public comment on the topic of livability, well, of course, you take 3 minutes. If there's any other topic, you can obviously take up your full 5 minutes during public comment. So I have a reminder. So if you could, again, please, before you start, giving us your name and address, if you tell us a topic that you want to talk about, it would help us track the time as well. So first up, we have Michelle Berman.
Good evening. I am Michelle Berman, the author of the 140-plus page attachment, but in my defense, it was 140-plus pages before I started marking it up. So I'm a Bellevue Towers resident. I live in Unit 3616, which faces south and west, and I primarily want to talk to you about the height bar and other proposed upzoning changes. Before Bill has handed you some materials, I'm going to walk through quickly, but before I get to those, I'm not going to go through all my other comments, document my proposed changes. But I do think that there are several things, speaking as a resident of downtown Bellevue, that would be super helpful for us in order to evaluate these proposals, because right now, not only is the document lengthy and fairly complicated for someone who doesn't have expertise in land use codes, but there's some data that would really help us to be able to digest it in a meaningful way and participate and give you constructive feedback. So the first thing I would ask is that I'm going to focus on the chart, the table. I think it starts on page 36. It's the one with the heights and the maximum heights and bars and other data, floor plates, etc. It would be super helpful to know if the maxes listed on there are actually maximums. In other words, do they include anything that was an exemption on FAR? Does it include anything for bonuses? I mean, can you go from some bonus and get beyond that? Does it include the rooftop equipment? So all of those things, actually, it's very meaningful to us to know, are these really the maximums? So that would be a first request. The second request is, it's really hard to compare these proposed changes because we don't actually understand what the current proposal is. So could we get a table, the same table, but with, you know, the numbers under the current code? And then the final request would be, given that there are already a number of relatively new properties that have been, you know, we'll just say properties built after 2000 that are built under the current code, we can't actually tell what their FARs are, and in some cases what their actual heights are recorded at. So could we get some property information about existing developed properties? What did they build to under the current regulations? Because, for example, if you're allowed to build, you know, 450 feet with a 6 FAR, what if they built 450 feet to a 5 FAR? Because that's all they could really do. Then we don't really know for a fact if you raise the height to 600 feet or the building's going to be actually be skinnier. We were told they're going to be taller and skinnier, but we don't have a way of actually feeling comfortable about those assertions. So it asks for that kind of data. So then to our presentation, I want to just kind of go through some historical background. I'm going to really focus on just a small part of the O2 South District. Right now, that is our only view corridor left. Okay, from the Bellevue Towers property. And so what I wanted to say is early on in this process, there was a proposal from the CAC to go from 250 feet to 400 feet in that area. This was back in 2014. There, we made a presentation, we hopefully argued persuasively that that shouldn't be increased to above 250. There was a decision during the meeting to keep it at 250.
Madam, sorry, I'm going to have to interrupt you. I think your time is up. If you could maybe summarize, please.
We'd like you to actually, there's historical facts that basically say that you were going to keep the MU district the same as that O2 South district. At the one lot that is not currently developed, the southwest corner of 106th and 4th, we'd like you to keep that the same as the MU as the historical discussion was intended, and keep that at the 250 max.
Thank you. So we have one question from Commissioner Carlson, please. Yes.
You mentioned in one of your PowerPoint slides, please do not recommend 300 feet, 365 feet. The promise that residents depended on when buying, can you tell me what that promise was and who made it?
It's actually, so when we bought, for example, when we bought our unit down the 36th floor, we went to look what was the height restrictions across south of 4th Street, and it says that that maximum height is 250 feet, actually. Okay, so we said, oh great, we're well above that. And you pay a huge premium, and it's actually, that isn't data here, it's old data. If you've actually got the current data, the premiums you pay for the higher floors is even more now, and it goes up even more. So we paid a premium for this. We looked at the code. We actually saw 250 feet. Now, what it turns out is that wasn't a true 250 feet. I understand that's one of the things we're trying to address in the new update, is to make that more transparent, because there was some kind of footnote someplace that said, well, there's some amenities that everybody gets. You can add 15% on, and that takes you up to 288. And someplace else in the code, there was an additional of 15 feet for equipment, so that took you up to 302. Of course, none of us, I mean, look, we're not land use code attorneys. We saw 250 feet max, and we thought it was 250 feet max. We relied on that in our decision, not only to buy that unit, but to pay an extra premium for that. And so that's what that's about.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Next, we have Mr. Bill Herman.
Sorry, I couldn't make last Wednesday. I can never make the second Wednesday. Always have a board meeting. So I live at Bellevue Towers. I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the amenities incentive system. One of the things that we find kind of frustrating is that the current amenity incentive system is being interpreted as a lifetime entitlement. We don't want that to happen again, and so I wanted to bring up that we should really have, when we write up this amenity incentive system, a system of, this is a 10-year promise, and explicitly state that, and review it and renew it. And it could be renewed every 10 years. But this, it's infuriating that we're going to make this building, the parking, structured parking, a permanent incentive when it's not even needed as an incentive. People would just do it. So raising the basic height to the old maximum height due to this parking requirement is blowing all this potential lift that could be put towards amenities. So you want to be able to lower the basic height even if no one wants parking anymore. So all these things are interpreted as being for forever. So what happens in the future if we don't need parking, if we don't need cars, if we were to make this a requirement rather than just keeping it in the amenity system, it's going to be in there forever. I mean, 20 years from now, who knows? Kids aren't getting licenses anymore. Driverless cars 20 years from now, Ubers, I don't know. We might not need this stuff, but this move to move the basic height to the old maximum height means that value is lost forever to the amenity system. So I really would like to see us put the let people have their amenity back for parking, but let's have the understanding that this is going to be phased out and that all amenities are going to be phased out. So livability, we hardly even talk about livability, what this livability thing. So is it good, is it bad? We don't even know. It's not even really being discussed. Do the incentive system make any sense? What we're being told about traffic doesn't make any sense to us who live down here. What we're being told is it's not going to get worse, that everything's all transit, that it's been the same for 20 years and it's never gotten any worse, and it won't. And it's not, does not jive with what we see. And so we kind of something rotten in Denmark. Skip safety, talk about the transparency.
I'm going to interrupt you. I think your time is up. So if you could come up, please. Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Whatever.
Thank you.
Ms. Pamela Johnston is next up.
Pamela Johnston, 3741 122nd Avenue Northeast. I just wanted to share with you a couple observations that I've come to in the last couple days. And that is, one, there's this video called Driving Downtown Bellevue, Washington, USA, 32 Minutes. It's a boring video. And basically, it just drives around downtown. And I thought, when I read, looked at it, I thought, yeah, I'm kind of bored with that too. So I counted the number of pedestrians I saw coming from my house to here. And I had to count some extras down the street that I saw as I was turning. 36. So I think one of the things that we have to think about is the liveliness of downtown Bellevue. I don't want everything to go too quickly, but I think that, you know, right now, yesterday when I was coming out of City Hall, I saw some young adults, 20s, 30s, maybe early 30s, who were at some conference and going back to the hotel and said, yeah, this isn't really a city. I was thinking this was going to be a city, but it's really like a city town. And so they basically didn't have anything to do coming out of their conferences that night, right, over at the Marriott. So I think that that's one of the things that we need to look at, is how things are put together that way, that we're making it a lively city. But I don't want us to go too fast. And I think that some things we need to figure out how to get the right things done first. So if we're down in our neighborhoods, maybe we need to do a little bit there before we do Grand Connection, but get the establishment structure there so that we know where we're going, but maybe not do everything right now. And I think that's just food for thought. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So Todd Woosley, I guess.
Good evening, Chair Davidos, members of the Commission, Mr. Mayor. For the record, I'm Todd Woosley with Hal Woosley Properties. Mailing address is PO Box 3325 here in Bellevue. I'm also, full disclosure, serve on the City's Transportation Commission, but I'm here tonight representing the Kramer family in Eastgate, and specifically to answer a question more thoroughly that Commissioner Carlson asked the last time I testified in support of the additional transportation study relating to the upzone, potential upzone of the CBD. And I want to use Eastgate as an example and commend the mayor and city council. About this point in the process in the Eastgate Land Use Code Amendment update, the citizens that were impacted by that raised a significant concern about significant congestion in the area. And the council, the mayor's leadership, said, we recognize this is a problem. Let's look and see what we can do to address it in a short term, authorized an additional study, and we are now, from that point in last fall to now, have come up with some recommendations that are poised for approval, relatively affordable. I'm going to pass out, I just have three copies of this process, I apologize. I hope you'll be willing to share. The net effect is that for a relatively modest investment of about $6 million, we can reduce the congestion going from Bellevue College down 148th, 150th to Newport Way by 40%, significantly improving the mobility for the people that currently use that and accommodating additional development in the area. I think it's a great example of how we can respond to the concerns over congestion that will be increased by increased development and trip generation, do it quickly. There are two other improvements in the way. The city's also looking at a broader study for that area that's already being initiated. And then the Washington State Department of Transportation is in the design process now to add a new shoulder running lane to help people in Eastgate exit, get on the I-90 going eastbound. So lots of improvements based on studies looking at how to accommodate the additional trips and the congestion that's already there. And the city, in this case, has set a great example, and I commend that to the Planning Commission as we move forward in the livability update.
Thank you. You're welcome. Any other questions?
I just have a question for clarity. So EB, I'm assuming that is bound. What is LT at the end, EBL? What does L stand for, EBT? What does T stand for?
Take a look here. I apologize. Eastbound travel, right turn, left turn, westbound, left turn. Yeah. I think the message I like, you can see the additional targeted lane capacity right there at the intersection of 150th and 37th as you get on and off I-90. You can also see the proposed 600-foot-long right turn lane as you go southbound up the hill and take a right on Newport Way. But the message I'd like to take, have you take from this is that do the study, find the improvements, get the benefits of the 40% reduction in travel time. It's really quite significant from 12 minutes now to down to closer to a little over 6 minutes once this is done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Jonathan Cagle up next, please.
Good evening, Commissioners and folks. My name is Jonathan Cagle, 9342 Vineyard Crest, Bellevue, Washington, 98004. Usually I'm here representing the New Crest Community Association, but today I'm representing myself as a private citizen and homeowner in Bellevue, and as someone who's been here at these meetings for, gosh, probably a couple dozen hours by now, and someone who participated to some extent in the CAC process as well, which sort of started out as a balance between amenities and height and density, where that additional height and density could buy these amenities that we believe would add to livability. But based on the recent public hearing comments and public hearing comments and other comments that I've been hearing over the many meetings, it seems like the balance is changing, that some of the things like spacing and incentives are being chipped away, and that balance is transforming to something that's very, very different from what was originally proposed at the CEC. Going through and trying to get community members to participate has been difficult. I sent out, hey, here's a little reading packet in advance of that public hearing meeting, and people said, what? It's what, 200, 300 pages now? It's really difficult to parse, and it's really difficult for people who are not as involved to get their heads around, who are members of the community, are not professionals in this area. So my call to you maybe is to try to find ways of getting broader community involvement to hear a broader range of inputs as this goes closer and closer to code. Some examples would be really helpful, specific examples of how different developments, and there are a number of people who have spoken here who have specific developments that they're considering, how those would be built with today's code versus the proposed code. What do the amenities look like in each way? What do these building silhouettes look like in each case? And maybe you could find a partner, maybe this needs to be done in the abstract, but by providing a few examples of how this will really impact the neighborhood, instead of having to do this calculus of how many bonus points, it's really, really difficult for me to get my mind around it. I think that this would help generate more productive community involvement and have a better feeling about all the work that everyone has done over the years on this project, if they can see, this is what's going to be built, this is what's good, this is what's bad. The Fortin Group has done some abstract density studies, but I'd really like to see something that we could say, this is bad development before, and much better development thanks to the work that's done in the community. And I think that will help crystallize some of the conversations that I don't think are happening right now. So, thank you.
Thank you. Any feedback is very welcome, sir. If you want to follow up with us, maybe send us a note or any recommendations, I think we'll be forward to
get. Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Mr. Patrick Bannon is next, please.
Good evening, Chair Davidoff and members of the Commission. My name is Patrick Bannon. I serve as President of the Bellevue Downtown Association. And just briefly tonight, wanted to provide a couple of comments and follow up to the public hearing and further review of the draft land use code. And specifically, off the top, I wanted to call attention to the early wins. We had an opportunity to go back and look at the early wins ordinance and then compare it to language in the draft code. And I made a call and some outreach to city staff to get some clarity on where and what cases that code language has actually changed in a couple cases with some new conditions. So I would ask that the Planning Commission and with an additional help from the staff to better clarify it's not in the margins, noting, for example, through block connection conditions that are a bit different from the actual ordinance language that was adopted by council. So that's one comment, just to get a little finer detail on it. Secondly, I certainly look forward to, on behalf of the BDA, hearing from the Parks and Community Services Board about their concerns and how we could collaborate and work together to see if the amenity incentive system is meeting the needs of the community. And then third, there have been questions about measuring this effort and how it connects to downtown with the village, having served on the CAC and tracking this process from the very beginning. I know that that has been a very serious priority of our group, as well as many stakeholders and residents, to understand that connection. And the connection has been carried through not only in the current code, but also to the council principles, the CAC recommendations, and the March 9th memo to the commission actually does a very good job of listing how the draft land use code actually connects to the council principles, the CAC recommendations, and really advance this concept of livability in downtown. So thank you for your time tonight. Appreciate your continued attention, and I look forward to more progress.
Thank you. Mr. Don Weintraub, up next, please.
Nothing to say. I'm just listening. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe it's Bob Killian and Shelley Knowles. Am I saying the names right?
Yeah, likewise. I thought I was signing up by a attendance sheet.
No worries, sir. People are going on. Mr. Kevin Wallace, up next.
Thanks. I wasn't initially going to do this, but since the Parks Board guys are talking, I guess I will feel licensed to do it too. I actually just wanted to provide a couple of things that you have not yet received. One is a table of information. Let's see, we got. Well, I didn't bring enough for the mayor, but
that's all right. I've seen it.
So I don't think you have. This is a table of information that I requested from Emil King about what amenity points were have been utilized in the past. And so two of the council principles that we issued were it needs to comply with law and it needs to not be a down zone. And with the amenity incentive system, that's where you're really getting, you take away all these amenities and you don't add back new ones, or you add new ones that are more expensive than were there today, then you're effectively putting in a down zone. So what we need to do is test this sort of, what is the before and after condition? And what this is showing is in the yellow is the ones that are being taken away, and the blue, or maybe it's purple, I'm colorblind, are the ones that remain. And so you can see there's very few that remain. And if you look at all those projects, the average of the ones that remain was only 9.47% was what was utilized. So in the current paradigm, you're going from a base of 3 to a max of 5, right? That's a 3 FAR gap. And 10% of that would be 0.3. So it's not even like a tenth. If you're saying going from 90% of base to max in the new paradigm, as Commissioner Lang had proposed, that's not still about three times more than the average of these projects was. So I just encourage you to take a look at that and kind of keep that in mind. If you take the pedestrian corridor out of the mix, it's even worse. It's a 5.48% average, and the median is only 0.57. So basically, most of the people are using the parking and the residential bonuses, and very few were using these other things. So I would encourage more amenities to be added to the list, and we need to really look at whether we're affecting a down zone here. The other thing I wanted to pass out was, this is the early winds ordinance that we had. This is difficult enough trying to get through this major process and keep everyone happy if we stick to what we already adopted. But this was a code that was adopted just a year ago, unanimously by the council, unanimously recommended by the commission, and I strongly encourage everyone to take a look at this and keep what has already been adopted, as opposed to trying to pave new trail for some unstated reason I can't figure out yet. But it looks to me like there's significant changes in what you're looking at now as compared to what we unanimously adopted just a year ago. So thanks very much.
Very good. Thanks.
I believe it's Amanda,
That's right, and I too thought I was signing an attendance register. So.
I want to apologize if I misspelled your name. Please spell with you. And I think last we have Mr. Vanderbilt.
Good
Barbados Planning Commission. My name is Carl Vanner. My address is 9103rd Avenue Northeast. I'm here representing Vanner Corporation. And I wanted to apologize for not being able to attend the public hearing on the 8th, but I was needed elsewhere as the to welcome the birth of our first little girl, Everly L. Vanderhoof. So you guys are important, but you think we're more important.
Really? Yeah. It was a hard choice.
Yeah. But it's for this reason I wanted to come today and provide some feedback and help ensure that that Bellevue is livable not only for my lifetime, but for hers as well. So generally, we support the comments made by the Bellevue Downtown Association and their letter that they presented on the 8th, specifically the need for a comprehensive transportation study to be conducted, and as well as a use-specific, use-specific parking study to be conducted to measure the effects of these changes to the land use code and what they might mean to the transportation network. I think it's very important. Also, the point about revisiting this all in a five-year time frame is a good one, too, because if we get it wrong, then maybe my daughter won't have to live with it, right? So, additionally, there's a specific point that I'd like to readdress with you again today, and you'll see a map that I have on the second page. Sorry, I didn't get staples in these. So, but the second page map, I've highlighted a little portion on, this is on page 113 of the draft, in section 2025A160. This is concerning through block connections. So here in Old Bellevue, this is Northeast First Place, about a half a block north of Main Street and about a block west of Bellevue Way. So that little portion of alley right there, as you can see, is on a relatively small size block compared to other super blocks in Bellevue. The code section here does say that the purpose of through block connections is to ensure that we can break these up and make it easier for pedestrians to get around. This alley is already in place and already a place where pedestrians walk. I'm asking that you guys ask staff to remove this from the map here because it doesn't go all the way through the block. One, if we try to promote this as a pedestrian thoroughfare, it takes people away from Main Street. And that's the main place they should be and where all the businesses there would like them to get that foot traffic going. So additionally to that, this is kind of the back of house area for three adjacent sites. Two are already completed. One is a future project. So this is where the garbage loading, move-ins, UPS, FedEx, all these type of activities need to occur right here. So I'd ask
you. So your time is up. So
yep, that's all I have.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot.
That was the last sign-up on the sheet. Is there anybody else who would like to take the public comment? If not, we will keep moving on. I think our next item is now the minutes to be signed, is that right?
January 25th.
Yeah. So, thank you, Commissioner. We'll give it to you, Mr. Cullen. Can you help us?
Okay, we're going to do January the 25th and February the 8th. Yeah. You actually approved these minutes, but the reason why they're back in front of you is your bylaws. I ran one portion of your bylaws past the city attorney and said, no, you can't do that. And what that is, that essentially says that their bylaws say that when you have a quorum, which is 4 out of 7 people, you start at a quorum, that if you fall below a quorum, you can still conduct business. And that means you can take action on things such as minutes. And the answer is no, you can't do that, even though your bylaws state that. So unbeknownst to me that your bylaws haven't been reviewed by the attorney, so I'm asking the attorney to go through that. And so I went back and took a look at where we've had that. I think there may be a few other places where we need to reaffirm minutes, but there's been no substantive action taken in the bylaws. But essentially, when you fall below your quorum, the meeting dissolves, in essence. And we'll talk more about that. But what I need you to do tonight is to re-adopt or we approve those minutes. And that is January the 25th and February the 8th.
Is there a motion to approve the minutes of Jan 25th?
So moved.
Wait a second.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Next up, do we have a motion to approve the February 8th minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Absolutely.
I abstain.
So February 2nd was no meeting. Let's move on to the March 1st one then.
I think if I remember, Commissioner Hillhorst wanted to take those up in the regular portion.
Correct. Just because we have seen these before, just to get them done, moved on, in case our meeting runs late.
Get the backlog good for sure.
That will not happen.
Not at all. I'm sure our good chair will let us go home early tonight.
There's one thing I do, we end on time, right? So, thank you, Mr. Cullen. I just want to clarify, just to make sure we all heard this, there is a change in terms of how we approach quorum. And perhaps at some point it's worth maybe delving a little bit more to share that context so we all have a shared understanding. All right, so next up then we move into the study session on livability. I think we welcome our staff team. Good evening.
Good evening, Chair and members of the Commission. For the record, I'm Dan Stroh, Planning Director, and with me tonight, just at the beginning of the study session, Mike Brennan, Development Services Director. We're the two departments that have been trying to take this effort forward. And it's been a fairly long path, and all the work that's gone on to date, trying to update a 35-year-old code. But we are in that process right now. We have really had a theme throughout this of trying to build on the success of downtown Bellevue over that 35-year period and kind of take it to the next level. This livability theme really has been kind of the overwhelming glue behind this, what's needed to continue that process of taking Bellevue to that next level. Last week was, 2 weeks ago, in this room, really was a milestone of the process, the formal public hearing, really part of an ongoing public involvement process that we have been through, really going back to the days of the Citizen Advisory Committee, co-chaired by Commissioner Lang there, and the new city council member, now Simons. So we've been really seeing the processing of what came out of the public hearing and really trying to understand the comments made, listening good, and a lot of comments were made. So what we have done, and the comments we have here are really about framing things for the path forward. As we really process through those comments, consider the input that we've received, and make sure that there's been due consideration of all these comments that we have. So tonight, we really would like to present a plan for moving forward, and we've really tried to take into account both the comments from the mayor about the need to keep this thing moving on the long path it's been on. We can kind of see the finish line ahead. We want to make sure we get there right and do our homework properly as we get there. We can kind of see that finish line there, and there's really a desire to get to that point. We've also been considering some of the process discussion that came out of the commission's retreat in terms of how to move forward with this. So we'll be presenting here a proposed path forward that will take us to that finish line, which is the recommendations being transmitted to the council. With that, I'll turn it over to...
I got a note, if I may. Thank you, Mr. Stroh. It's been, again, a very long journey, I think, for all of us staff and commissioners and public and council members. I believe there's a very successful public hearing 2 weeks ago. I would like to pause for a few minutes and just give the commissioners an opportunity. You know, we heard a lot of feedback at the public hearing 2 weeks ago. It would be good for you to perhaps share, you know, top of mind, what you saw, what you heard, and also whether you have any advice for us in terms of how we might expedite the next step. So I would like to open it up and go across the table. Somebody wants to go first? We're going clockwise?
All right.
Over to you, Commissioner Hillhorst.
I was ready to start. Sorry.
Sorry.
Yeah, I don't have anything profound to say, really. I thought it was a good public hearing. I thought there were a lot of really good topics and good feedback. I think there's a few maybe early wins we could maybe hit on this. I saw a few themes that I can point out, and I'll look to my other commissioners to point out some other ones. One of the themes that we've heard consistently is there was some discussion around the property on 112th and Main, and we've actually been presented with some updated codes around that. So that's one piece that I think my fellow commissioners and I think we can discuss, and we've been asked multiple times to give direction on that property. I believe Andrew Miller is one of the representatives for that. And for some reason, we are stuck, and so I think maybe give some final directive on that property and that the code requests that they've changed might be a good thing. I think that's one piece. I think the BDA recommendation was excellent. I think getting something in writing really helped us a lot to see where their pieces were. I feel confident with a lot of the things that they recommended. I think the one piece that I'm just not solidified on is the 80-foot tower spacing. I read even in some notes, I believe the CAC even potentially recommended the 80-foot spacing that came out. I've got the book here and I've been looking for it. But that's been on our docket for maybe almost close to a year. And so I understand really everyone kind of came forth once the 40-foot setback showed up. And I understand the panic around that and why that's a negative to many in the development community. And one of the things we asked the staff last meeting is, can we come up with some options to mitigate that? Some comments were made, everybody else does 40 feet tower spacing. Well, that's great. We're Bellevue. We're not everybody else. I think we have an opportunity with a blank canvas to be something more than everybody else. And I'm not ready to kind of throw that away. I'd like to explore that a little bit more. So that's a piece I'm not ready to probably vote or pass on tonight. I don't think we've gotten some options and some good discussion around that piece. I think those are some of the pieces that really kind of I'm settled on, and a piece that I think we need some more discussion on. So, start with that.
Thank you. Commissioner Carlson, please.
Well, I think there's a fundamental question that we should address at the outset, which is, has downtown Bellevue been served well by the existing plan that we are now augmenting or supplementing? I think the answer is yes. I think downtown Bellevue, by almost every measure, economic growth, amenities, we've created a whole new neighborhood, all of this made possible by the existing plan, which of course raises the issue, do we then need to make major revisions to this plan? Now, some people think that we do. I do not. I think there are some minor adjustments, minor changes that need to be made. I would like to see us set the new base Florida area ratio at 90% of the new maximum. I'd like to see us sweep through the 40-foot setback rule. I think that was misbegotten from the outset. Some other changes that Commissioner Hillhorst mentioned a moment ago. But after all of these meetings, all of this reading, all of the study, the great input that we've gotten from staff and from my fellow commissioners, and most important, from the stakeholders, the people directly affected by any changes made, I think that we have just a few adjustments to make. This isn't the Articles of Confederation in need of sweeping revision to create a new constitution. I think that we already essentially have a constitution that has served us well in downtown Bellevue, and we just need to make some minor updating, minor adjustments to keep a good thing going.
Thank you, John. Commissioner Walsh, please.
So I have to follow a professional speaker. Great. Okay. With changes, there will always be winners and losers, and I hate to see losers. I hate to see anybody lose in a situation where we're changing for livability. What I continually hear is, where's the livability in this process? How does this help the people who live downtown? I'd like to see a lot more, a lot closer discussions between the people who live there and the people who want to build there. I agree. I'm not a land use attorney. I'm not a structural engineer. These tables and things are confusing, and I've had professional people walk me through more than once. So if I lived in downtown and I had a building across the street from me, I can certainly understand why, what it was, what the rules were yesterday, the rules are not today. So I have some sensitivity toward that, and yet nothing can stay constant, and I understand that as well. One of the things I'd like to see with the 90% change, I like the idea that it's equitable across the way, but I still want to see or hear from either Burke or the Land Use Institute on, does that work for them? They reviewed something entirely different. And I've had it explained to me that parking got pulled in, and that's why it's 90%, and then because it has to be 90%, to realize the extra 10% would be difficult if it was more than 10%, and yet then the concept gets folded in about a super bonus. So to me, that doesn't square. It leaves more questions in my mind. I am a big proponent of affordable housing being built where it's earned. I'd like it to be built on the same property. I've heard the discussion about, well, there's more cost-effective land somewhere else. We can put it somewhere else. But if the property is currently owned where it would be built, there is no property acquisition. So we're really talking about return on investment. So if we're going to talk return on investment, we should really be honest about what we're talking about. And then look at that in the light of day. 80-foot separation, I really like the idea of it. I don't want to sweep it completely away. I'd like a more, not a case-by-case basis, but more ratios. How do we get light and air without dropping straight from 80 feet to 40 feet? But if your lot size is XYZ and your space between the street, when you have street space, how does that all work? What, could we do a percentage of space instead of a flat 80 feet? I think that might also add to an interesting skyline. And then I heard loud and clear the parks issue. I think when you're going to add density, I think it's really important to keep the existing parks, enhance the existing parks, and maybe add parks within the same geography as that amenity is being earned. I also, not as my role as a planning commissioner, but because I'm on a roll here, I'd like to see a parks designation where parks just stay parks in perpetuity. So I think that's it.
Thank you, Commissioner Walton. Commissioner Lang, please.
Say it's hard to follow me.
It is hard to follow you, but thankfully you didn't follow me. Everybody would be asleep. So I'm going on 4 years of this process now. And
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. There was a show. Is it Gilligan's Island? The 3-hour tour. Anyway. So there's kind of like, I guess, some high-level things that I just say, and then kind of maybe a couple of detailed things. Really, when I think about like the task that we're at here, and I think Commissioner Carlson's point is really well taken, but I guess like a general point is like, what is the problem, so to speak, that we're trying to solve? And I don't mean problem in a pejorative way, but like, what is it that we're trying to do? And that was one of the, and I see Mr. Stroh is nodding his head, because this was part of the original orientation of the CAC as we went on our walking tour of downtown Bellevue back in the spring of 2013. And this was kind of part of the initial part of the process, was looking at these, you know, taking this kind of like close look at like what the outcomes have been, in downtown Bellevue over the last 35 years. And when I think, I look at that, and then I think of also sort of like, you know, and again, not to use the word problem or whatever in a pejorative sense, but like, what is it that we're at and why would we do this? So what we're really talking about, again, is kind of in a way like rezoning or changing the zone, because that's, you know, at the end of the day, like what the code is. So then I put my professional hat on, and I, as everybody knows, unfortunately, I am a land use attorney, so I get to do this day and night, and probably not many better at it during the day than I am here, just for the record. But, you know, a lot of times when you talk about, like, doing a rezone, you look at, like, well, what is the basis for a rezone? And typically the basis for a rezone, like, under the common law and the rest of it, is that there are some changed circumstances. And the rezone needs to be in the public interest and blah, blah, blah. But there's really, you know, basically there's like three reasons that you would do a rezone. One is to implement the comprehensive plan. Two is like change circumstances. And all of these, it has to be in the public interest. So I've thought about this a lot. Like, well, what has really changed over the last 35 years? And at a macro level in downtown Bellevue, really two things have changed. One is a change that is coming, but it feels more imminent as we see the construction, and that's the coming of the light rail project and the two stations that are essentially more or less in downtown. And then the second one is we've had a significant increase in the downtown residential population, and I mean really significant, where I think that I heard a number at the last Planning Commission meeting that we're over 15,000 residents in downtown now. Whereas, you know, 35 years ago, I don't think there were 1,500 residents in the actual downtown boundaries. So that is a profound change. And I think that when we start talking about this concept of livability and we really start thinking of our downtown as being a 24-hour city, although I did appreciate the comment about maybe we don't need to change super, super fast. That was Ms. Johnson, I think, said that. But we're getting there. And there are starting to be places to go. Even I, you know, I'm an old guy, but even I find places that I can go, like, past my bedtime in downtown Bellevue now, which means past dark. And so I see those as, like, the big changes. So what does this mean, kind of, like, bringing it down? Well, to me, there's kind of, like, the big challenge, I think, and we heard this tonight from the Parks Commission, and we heard this a lot during the CAC presentation, is obviously as downtown has filled in just under the 35-year-old zoning code, we start to feel, because I don't think it's changed actually from an ownership standpoint, but we start to feel the lack of what I'll call publicly accessible ground level open space, which is a long way of saying, like, things at street level that anybody can walk on at any time or enjoy. So we're feeling that. It's not actually that there's less of it, because the property owner issue really is a change, but I think that we feel that more as things go vertical. And so I think, like, the big challenge that I sensed sitting on the CAC, and the big challenge that I've sensed going through this process for the last 4 years, is what do we do to it's not a matter of preserving ground level open space, publicly accessible ground level open space, but actually how do we incentivize developers going forward and property owners going forward to actually provide more of that where it isn't. And so I think that is going to be, as we get into the details, it's probably not the big rocks thing, but that will be something to look at. And I guess kind of like the final two things is, you know, we have a wonderful downtown, and I think one of the guiding principles from the CAC, from the start of the CAC process to getting here tonight, and how we wrap up is, you know, sort of like the do no harm principle. So we don't have a problem in a pejorative sense. We have some opportunities here. I've already heard some of my fellow commissioners kind of share some of the things about, like, what we'll call, I love it, Chair Davidoff's, this idea of the big stones, like some high-level things that if we can agree as a board and provide that direction tonight, then the devil's in the details on those other things. I think, though, that when we talk about doing no harm, one of the big things, though, and I think this is a big guiding thing for me, is this council direction that we not have a down zone, and that we have an incentive system that's actually an incentive system, and not, and I'm sorry to use this word, but not an extortion system. And I know that the, probably the most profound change that we're looking at, but I think we've sort of tacitly accepted it in the code, is this idea that we're no longer going to provide FAR bonus for structured parking, and no longer provide it for residential development within downtown. And that's fair, but I think that it is really important that if we're going to take that away, that we don't play some sort of game where we take away the thing that has really given, and I think that this table that Mr. Wallace provided us tonight, which is based on permits, and we received the same information at the CAC level, the bottom line is people were earning 100% more or less, 90 to 100% of their FAR just providing parking or residential or both. And if we take, if we take those away and we don't put that back to that 90%, we are going to downzone downtown Bellevue, and we're going to go from having an incentive system to an extortion system. So those are my high level thoughts.
Thank you, Commissioner Lane. I think everyone's still awake.
That's a room up there. Right?
I don't have much to add, but I do just want to encourage us to keep the community and livability specifically in mind as we think through this. And I understand the developer economics are important. I just want to make sure that we keep some sort of a balance there, to make sure that we're keeping the pedestrian, bikers, and so forth interest in mind. And so that's it.
Well, as my fellow commissioners know, that I'm from Haiti, and in a country where this process that we do here is non-existent, I certainly appreciate the fact that we have it and we allow the community to come and talk to us. I hear my Commissioner Lang and Commissioner Carlson point that maybe the code as is doesn't need to be revamped, doesn't need to be changed. I strongly disagree, because Bellevue is growing, whether we like it or not. And as a commission and as leaders in the community, we have a responsibility to accommodate that growth. That being said, I do believe that it needs to be done thoughtfully. We need to take account the community's concerns. Changes is difficult for everyone. And the reason it's difficult is because people are afraid to lose something. So with that in mind, we need to find ways to acknowledge the loss that the community is telling us that they fear is going to happen and mitigate that. In terms of the amenities incentive system that we're proposing, my fear is that we may be creating a system that doesn't do anything differently from the existing one. Affordable housing, I believe, is strongly needed in this community, and I hope that we put something in place that actually works, so we have affordable housing within the community, not allow developers to just pay and get, just to get rid of having to build something in sight. Thank you.
Thank you. That was, I think, a very productive run through the commissioners. I know, so you have, I think, a process walkthrough, I believe,
yes,
a timeline. If I may, given the mayor's feedback in terms of both the, I guess, the timely execution of this process, and also his apparently now he's part of the Big Rocks team. So going back to the Big Rocks team, perhaps if I could, just across the table, are there any Big Rocks that we feel, or you feel, you've gotten feedback, and certainly over the public hearing, that perhaps we could use this time before we delve into the process of next steps in terms of maybe the closure on Big Rocks, or perhaps clarification that we could ask our staff team in terms of Big Rocks. Does that make sense? Please.
Thank you, Chair Davidoff. I unsurprisingly came with a list of things that I thought were Big Rocks that I thought that I would like to just move for inclusion in the revised draft, or I guess the draft going forward, I have 9 separate enumerated items. I would be happy to present all of them as one motion, or just go through and make a motion on each of them just to see where we are on these things, because I think that based on the community feedback that we've heard, even looking at some of the materials that came in tonight, and then just hearing what people were saying around the table, I think that these were items that were more or less general consensus, maybe with some tweaking. So if you would entertain that.
Please go ahead.
Okay, and so I think that I'll actually launch in with my third item, or actually it's my second item, and this is just to kind of pick up where Commissioner Morisot left off, because I couldn't agree with her more that we need to look at some of the affordable housing issues. And so this comes out of the VDA materials, but this also comes out of some of the other comments that we've heard, not only at the Planning Commission level, but literally going all the way back to the very early meetings and some of the focus groups sessions that were heard at the CAC level. And so I would move that that the code be amended so that there is a 1.0 FAR exemption for affordable housing, and that affordable housing exemption be used in conjunction with the multifamily tax exemption program.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All in favor, all against, please say nay.
I don't have enough information.
So I just have to
abstain.
Okay, fair enough. Mm-hmm. If I missed the eyes again, if they could please all in favor.
Actually, I think after the motion and second,
we should have discussion. So one question. You're proposing the multifamily tax exemption. Does it exist in downtown today, or we're proposing to add it in downtown?
I believe that the council adopted it as one of the areas that was designated that you
could. I knew it was certain areas. I just wanted to confirm downtown was one of the areas.
Yes.
Okay. So that's existing.
Thank you, Jeremy, for calling out the discussion of this. Thank you.
Let's go to parliamentary box here.
Keep me honest.
Yes.
Please. Do you have any
So, Chair, could I make a comment?
Please.
Thank you. Really want to follow the direction that we received from the commission. The way that the staff would normally serve these up, and there's some comments tonight that are very, very helpful and very much on point. We began this process with the sense that there was a lot that worked really well in the downtown code, and it's a matter of improvements on a very solid base of success, making sure that we didn't actually do harm to the things working well, which was the beginning of this, was the land use code audit that kind of laid out what seems to be working really well, what might be tweaked, and where there's room for improvement to be able to take it to that next level. So really important piece that was kind of a foundational piece for this that Commissioner Lang referred to with the CAC. But we had hoped to go in terms of really processing the input that came from the public hearing was to have a chance to take those items and in some cases bring some additional analysis forward, possibly some options, which I heard a couple of commissioners mention tonight, so that when those are sort of up for sort of conclusive recommendations from the commission, you have the full picture before you. So that would be the way we would normally process issues like this, through a process so that we can actually bring back some level of analysis and some options for you to consider before making a final recommendation. Obviously, it's very helpful tonight to know how the commission frames these big rocks so we can put the right attention on the items. But that kind of process is how we normally would pursue the closure on items like this.
Thank you, Mr. Sroy. I do appreciate the clarity, but if you would indulge me just for a little bit of time. My intent is, given coming off the public hearing, while we still have the feedback fresh in the commissioners' minds, if there are some, again, at this point, you're going to hit me, the big rocks again, if we can clear a few of those, I think it would help us progress much quicker, and that's really just my intent. I don't know how many we could clear, but I certainly would like to spend at least some time just around the table, if I may.
Sure.
So please indulge me, if you will.
I have a recommendation there.
Yeah.
So as you go through each of these, we leave some time for staff to comment on it. I know it's not the ideal order, but any context would be useful.
If I could propose, yeah, if you have a question that you would like a clarification, absolutely, please go for it. Commissioner Gallegos.
I wonder if we just change the verbiage instead of making a motion and making a final yes-no decision. I think I want to go through your list, but maybe say, how does everybody feel about this, 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 and this discussion, just so it doesn't feel final, maybe?
Okay, so let me speak to this motion and speak to procedurally what I see. And this goes to what we have done, whether it's the SMP, the comp plan, all the rest of it. If we don't start working on the document and turning it into something, we're going to get to May. And then if we wait until May and we don't start honing things in, we're not going to get it done. At the same time, it's not final until we make a recommendation to the council. And so I don't actually see, and I hate to say this for the stakeholders, I don't actually see that anything that comes out until we make our final recommendation is actually final. But I also don't see, and this is just my experience on this commission, that if we don't actually sit here and do our work and actually take votes and direct staff to make changes, that this document, and I've been carrying around, I've got three packets with me tonight with the exact same document in it, even though we've talked about it since this draft published. So I don't want to see in my packet at the next meeting the same document that I've been schlepping around now in triplicate form for the last three meetings. So my intent is, let's work on these big rocks with an understanding that if we get to the end of this process as we go through and we say, oh, now that it's all together and we see this all together, it doesn't, there's some things we still need to tweak, we can still do that. But I also don't believe that we're going to get staff to make very clear changes to this draft document if we don't take a vote. So I'm asking that we actually take votes.
So maybe it's we take a vote that staff, to your point of giving staff direction, we're making a vote not necessarily to recommend it to council at this point.
That's
we're
correct.
Making a vote
to move forward.
To move forward with it in terms of staff.
Revise the document so that when we look at it again, it's better. This is the starting point for the next look.
Right.
And then we'll make further revisions and we'll get another draft back. But I can't keep looking at this same document and not move some of these things forward.
Mm-hmm. So. And I would like to use the time, well, again, we just have the public hearing and we have context and information we've heard from staff, from the public. So, I don't know if other folks in the table have any of these lists as well. But certainly, Commissioner Lang, you have received that list, so I'll give it back to you. Perhaps we could quickly run through, spend some time, and then see how many of those we can put to rest.
Can we just tweak the motion language so that it acknowledges that it's directing staff as opposed to moving it forward as a recommendation?
Charles, I accept Commissioner Barstow's friendly amendment that the motion is that we direct staff to revise the draft document so that there is an affordable housing FAR exemption of one FAR to be used in conjunction with a multifamily tax exemption program. Okay.
Yeah. So I believe we had a clarification at this point, right? Questions, discussions? If not, I would ask yes.
I had a sidebar conversation with my land use attorney. I have to pay him to do it. The question that I had was the FAR exemption, would that preclude fee in lieu? And it would have to be built on site, is my understanding.
And so not only would it have to be built on site, but you could not do a fee in lieu and get the FAR exemption, but you especially couldn't do the fee in lieu and use the multifamily tax exemption program. So there's a real advantage for linking those, not just that it actually makes it a viable incentive, and it will probably virtually ensure that we do see affordable inclusionary housing built, but it makes sure that nobody's paying their way out.
Any questions, clarifications?
No, that was good.
Thank you. Thank you again for the clarification. Again, if I could ask all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
I think we have that covered. Let's go on, please.
All right, so my next one is just that we have the column in all of the dimensional requirements. And again, this is that we would direct staff to revise the draft code so that the maximum FAR is, pardon me, so that the base FAR across all zones in all instances is 90% of the proposed max FAR as shown in the table.
I second that. Second. All right. Questions, please, comments, clarifications?
So are you saying to use 90% across all the different zones, the different districts?
I am. I'm saying that in the column, which is the third from the right-hand column in the table in, I believe it's 2025A.060A4, maybe? Do I have that right, Mr. Sterl?
What page are you on?
I'm on page of, I'm not going to say packet, because I'm using the March 1st packet because that was the one that I wrote all over, and I brought March 22nd and March 8th. Turns out same great document. But it's basically the dimensional requirement tables, and it's on pages 36 and 37 of the draft code, but not necessarily. It's on pages 60 and 61 of the March 1st packet, and let me see where that is on that.
So it's page
23? Actually, you know what? It looks like it might even be on pages 60 and 61 of the March 22nd packet. But it's just the column that is titled floor area ratio colon base slash maximum.
Yep. And is that for residential and non-residential?
And yes, and what I am saying is that in all instances, the base be 90% of whatever the proposed max is as reflected in the table.
I'd like to again repeat my comment, and I do appreciate the fact that these tables have stayed and they've gone week to week. But I did ask in the last meeting to have some analysis by the consultants say, I don't have your breadth of knowledge of this. We're making a change from what was proposed. I'd like to hear the experts who proposed it agree or disagree. To that, I mean, I keep envisioning taking what was and what is and seeing the change, because not only are you getting to 90%, that's equitable, where did they start? What's the delta? So without seeing that, I don't think we have a complete picture. And I do realize that it takes more time, and maybe I wasn't as clear before when I asked for it, but I would like to see that. To have comfort that there aren't huge sways that we're not seeing.
Commissioner Morrison, please.
I agree with Commissioner Walter. And in addition, I just want to remind the commission, we have been going through this for a while and looking at it from the CAC perspective. And the CAC's perspective was not to have the same increase across the entire area. There are some areas they wanted the FAR to increase and others they did not. So making this the same across the board is completely deviating from the CAC's vision.
Thank you. Any other comments on this particular motion?
I would have to concur with Commissioner Walter. If we could ask before we make a final decision to have that column and show the delta, just so everybody's on the same page as how much has been changing If we want some additional feedback, that would be good, but that would be helpful.
So it sounds like an amendment.
As a next step.
So we've actually had all of this information. We've got the information here in front of us tonight. And this is actually, we've heard from virtually every stakeholder, as well as the BDA, that this is not only the equitable way to address the fact that we're removing parking and residential from the bonus chits, if you will, but this is the only way that you can ensure that across all zones, that if you were to build the exact same building, that you wouldn't have to provide an acre of open space over here and provide nothing over here by way of the amenity system. And again, what the Burke analysis said was, on the whole, if we take away parking and, or the residential bonus, on the whole, we would need to increase the base FAR to 85% of the max just for the threshold of viability for a project. I don't want to be in a situation where we guess wrong or Burke was off a little bit, rounding this way or that, because actually in some of their instances it was closer to 87, and others it was down in the low 80s. And as the table, the data that was presented to us at the CAC, as well as the data that Mr. Wallace presented us tonight, which is actually the same data, the bottom line is, if you provided structured parking under the existing code, you earned over 90% of the FAR that you need, of the maximum FAR. In fact, you often earned close to 100%, and you had leftover bonus FAR that you couldn't use because of our required incentives, which, you know, I've been joking about for a while, right? A required incentive. So the Burke consultant came up with a number at 85%, which was the threshold of viability. The reality is, for 35 years, you got to 90% or more of your max FAR simply by providing structured parking. And so we're taking away structured parking. I'm saying, if we're going to take away structured parking, based on the data in the Burke analysis, based on 35 years of actual permit data, then we need to recalibrate the base FAR to 90% of the max FAR, because if we don't, we're going to be downzoning a bunch of properties. The CAC did not consider this. That's not part of that. They did not consider the Burke analysis because it wasn't done until a month or so ago. But the CAC was cognizant, and one of the themes, and it's reflected in the document, and I can tell you as the co-cruise operator, we were worried from the very start, from day one. We as the committee members, as well as the stakeholders, including the BDA, from day one, 4 years ago, that the removal of the parking bonus was going to be a massive downzone for downtown. The only way to avoid that, in my opinion, and based on all the data and 4 years of this, is that the new base FAR has to be 90% of the max. So I would hope that we can provide that.
Thank you, Commissioner Lang. If I could just make a quick comment. Our role as the Planning Commission is a policy advisory capability to staff and to the council. We've had over 18, maybe 20 different sessions on these topics over the last months, years. We've gotten a lot of information. It is certainly your prerogative to ask for more information, but I think you would be abdicating responsibility if we did not have a point of view at this point to provide to staff. And so with that, I would like to ask for a vote on this, just to get a sense of where we stand directionally.
I want to thank you for the clarification, because you're pointing out that because of this, it does not deviate from the existing plan. It restores what would be a deviation if we did not do this.
So, please, Commissioner Walter, and then Commissioner Brooks. Yes.
So I'm struggling with, we've got experts and we have experts, and they're saying different things, and to have data that can support what Commissioner Lane can just knows by course of his business, I think it would not be prudent. I'm sorry that it wasn't here tonight, but I will not be able to vote without that clarity. This table here isn't, I missed the presentation and I do apologize for that, but it's looks, just by looking at it, looks like it's an average, not, so I would like to see the data, or I will just abstain from the vote, whatever the group decides it in order to move forward, and I certainly appreciate the need to move this forward.
Thank you, Commissioner Walton. Commissioner Brooks, let me get a question.
Yeah. So going back to the comment I made earlier about balancing community with development economics, right? It's a clarification. I just asked Commissioner Lang about what the significance is in terms of, is the issue, the core issue, that it's, that it costs more to reach your maximum. What was the reason for, or what was underlying Burke's recommendation? I mean, what were the policy outcomes that we were looking to achieve? This is a question for staff in that Burke analysis. So taking the economics, right, got that part. What were the policy outcomes that we were looking to achieve, that, or the assumptions that we were making during that analysis?
So complicated question, but I'll try to answer it in simple terms. This is the conversation we'd hope to be able to key up with a lot more context to go back and look at this and recount kind of how we got here. One of the contexts that the consultant was looking at were the council principles. One of the council principles was that where properties were actually having greater height, greater FAR, that there'd be some offsetting provision for that in the incentive system that would compensate for the impacts of that additional FAR. And that is why this is a very important point. The difference is not just 85 to 90, but it's the 85 to 90 context between either the existing FAR, which is what the consultant proposed based on the council principles and analysis, versus the new FAR. So in short, what the difference is, particularly that where the properties are being upzoned, where there's new FAR being created, there is no there's not a difference being asked for in terms of offsetting those impacts through the incentive system. So we were going to bring back, there are actually pros and cons and an analysis about various ways to go with that, because there are arguments on either side about changes. We didn't want to bring that back in a more systematic way to the commission to have that information to really fully understand what was analyzed, what alternatives are, what the actual trade-offs are going with these various alternatives. But in essence, one of the key parameters that the consultant and staff were actually looking at when the existing proposal was developed was that council principle that basically called for that offsetting amenity consideration for the impacts for additional FAR is being added.
Thank you, Mrs. Strode. Commissioner Hillhorst, please.
I just wanted to say, I don't think anyone's saying no to the 90%. I think there's just an ask for a little bit more data. Again, the BERC data is relatively new in this process. And so I think the ask is pretty simple. Can we just have another column, just kind of be able to weigh it out? And, you know, I think we're probably close to a decision, but I think that's just a final ask. And since tonight is not a final recommendation, I don't know why that couldn't be accommodated. Again, not saying no to the 90%, but I think some commissioners just need a little bit more information before coming to that conclusion, and it'd be nicer if a majority was at that conclusion versus not. So, just my two cents.
If I could just take a quick pulse check on this, again, given everything we've seen, you've heard, you observed, and obviously your insights, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those against say nay. All right, at this point, I think we will go back to you and say we want, obviously, we want more information on this particular topic. So, back to you, Commissioner Lang. Okay, moving to you, Elizabeth.
Okay. The third point that I have here is this is just looking at the perimeter district, and this is the perimeter A district along the northern boundary of downtown, and I'm looking at the Mr. Strohbride could just tell you exactly what page is the map on page 59, and it's page 35, it's in 2025A. And this is a follow-on. This is both feedback from the community as well as a kind of a comment that I had made at, I think it was on the 8th, but it might have been the 1st. But if you look at that A1 perimeter district, I just want to make sure everybody's on the same page. If you look at the A1 perimeter district along the northern boundary of downtown, and I am making a reference specifically to the point from 102nd, it's 102nd Avenue Northeast, which, because it's not labeled, if you see where it says DT-R-District right there in the upper left corner there, if you were to draw a line through the S in District, that street there is basically, that's 102nd. And so I am proposing to amend the A1 district to basically, my proposal would be to have the A1 from 102nd Avenue Northeast eastward to 112 become A2 zoning. And that is just in reflection, well, that's my motion would be that the direction to staff would be that they would amend any map or materials coming forward to have that portion of that become an A2 overlay instead of A1. And the difference between A1 and A2. So the basic difference is that it will allow for, and this, if, you know, just so we're all on the same page, if you look at page 61, there's the dimensional requirements. And what A2 allows for, and this goes all the way back to the CAC, is it allows for what's called a 5-over-1 mixed-use project, which is what we see everywhere, where you've got the retail and the shops at the ground level, and then you've got wood-framed apartments or condominiums above. In order for that to be viable, you need to have about a 70-foot height limit. And right now, the A1 would put a 55-foot height limit, so you could do that. And the reason that this has been discussed, this was discussed at the CAC, this is part of the BDA's recommendation, as well as recommendation from other stakeholders, is that in that area of the A1 district along the northern perimeter, you don't have abutting single family uses right across the street. Once, you know, as you kind of move, if you're sort of familiar with the area around 102nd, that's basically where the post office is. And so as you move east from there, obviously you come to Bellevue Way, you can see that there are, if you kind of know the area, there's like a little strip center there that I think has like a pin, there's a Panera and a bank and some other stuff. But as you move along there, you don't have single family uses right across the street. You've got, there's already a code required buffer, so you're already looking that without the street itself, you've got like 32 feet of sidewalk and buffer. And then once you get farther east, you've got the strip park, and I'm blanking on the name of the park, Mr. Stroh, what's the name of that?
McCormick Park.
Opposite that. So if you're thinking like down where you get down by the library. And so I'm proposing that we give that direction.
Do you have a second?
So the, just for clarity, so the new heights would be 70 feet for residential?
It would allow for it would be the perimeter overlay. And so if somebody did a purely commercial project, it would still be stuck at 40 feet. But if you're doing a mixed-use 5-over-1 project, because more than half of your floor area would be residential under the city's land use interpretation, they would treat that as a residential project, is my understanding.
Okay, I just want to make sure that I'm following what would be changed.
Right.
So residential would become 70 feet by making it an A2 overlay. How about the FAR? Is that going to be bumped up now from 3 to 3.25?
The base, however, I would say, in all fairness, we don't know what the base FAR will be because we have proposals of either 85% or 90% or whatever the commission ultimately lands on as we go forward. So there is a, so I'll just leave it at that.
I just want to make sure that if we decide to move on with this, everyone knows what we're agreeing on.
So that may change from 3 to 3.25. I get your point that we don't know if it's going to be 85-90. And then the triggers for additional height is also going to change.
Well, I have a different amendment that I would propose, which is that we remove the entire column for trigger for additional height, but that's not what we're talking about, and that is because we've heard very well from the community that they should know what the maximum height is and not have to look over their shoulders or play choose your own adventure with the code to figure out if and when somebody's going to go unlock or add another couple stories on the building. But I'm not there yet.
May I ask staff if they see any unintended consequences with this proposal?
So I think at this point, since we're kind of diving into the details of the code conversation, kind of hit the accelerator at full speed here, that we might want to invite the staff that have been dealing with the development of the code. Also suggest that obviously there's some at least one issue so far that you're asking for some additional information. Maybe we could come back and then kind of go through the way that we were proposing to kind of bundle and set up these topics, particularly the big rocks, for conversation and decision or direction from the commission. Kind of a more systematic way. If you remember at the retreat, there was conversation about how to do this more efficiently. Let's agree on the process at the beginning so we're really clear about how we're going to advance. And so we want to maybe spend the commission could indulge us on that. At some point, a few minutes to walk through and get agreement on how we'll process those. So when we do come back, we are hit and run.
Absolutely, and we will. I guarantee you that. But I do want to make sure that just, and maybe we should accelerate on this one, Commissioner Lang, because we may have other commissioners also with items. But I would like to, obviously, like to invite staff up and up front here as well. But I do want to run through this list if we can again, in the interest of moving forward. So I go back to your motion then, Commissioner Lang. Do we have a second for that motion?
Discussion.
We had the discussion.
Okay.
Do we have a second?
A second that we can discuss.
Yeah.
Okay. There's no agreement to the motion.
There's no second? All right.
Second.
You have a second. Okay.
We have a discussion.
But it's in proper discussion at this point. I think you already actually were in discussion earlier. So if there are other clarification points at this point, please go ahead. If not,
so there was a question posed to staff about the thinking behind how we wound up here. So I can try to answer that, and then the land use code staff that were working this might join in. But Commissioner Marosso asked how we got here. The CAC had a recommendation essentially to increase heights in the perimeter A, which is the area right next to the edge of downtown, which is designed as a transition zone with the adjoining neighborhoods, to increase that to 70 feet. And in earlier discussions with the commission spent quite a bit of time thinking about where was that appropriate to increase it to 70 feet and where might it raise issues with transition, where those heights were coming just a little bit too close, and where the transition still felt more graceful, staying at the current 55 feet. So the current code essentially captured the direction that came from the commission in those earlier discussions, as you really you took the CAC's general recommendation to increase heights in the perimeter A from 55 to 70, and you kind of tailored it as at the time the balance point where you thought 70 feet made sense, but where you still felt 55 was the more graceful transition with those adjoining neighborhoods. I think I hope that answers your question, Commissioner Morso, about how you've landed here and what that consideration was. This was the direction from the commission at that earlier point that was captured in the code here.
My question was more, because I do remember how we got here and the discussion that you're referring to, is any unintended consequences of making that an A2 versus what it is now an A1?
Well, I think the concern would be, as the concern the commission had earlier, to make sure that whatever transition occurs there with the adjoining neighborhood, that it still feels, that 55 feet's been in place for many, many years, and that feels like that transition is still the appropriate transition. It can be a very sensitive matter for neighborhoods directly up against the downtown, and downtown Bellevue is unusual in having very healthy neighborhoods pressing up right against the edges. So an unintended consequence could be if that additional height felt like just
a less graceful transition with those adjoining areas.
Okay, question?
Approximately how much increased density would that mean for that 15 additional feet residential, even residential?
So the maximum FAR would not change,
right?
Because that's not on the table.
Okay.
There are a couple consequences about the way the building envelope might change with the additional height. What the CAC discussed was the potential for a more generous bay for retail that might occur on the ground floor. Oftentimes, the retail bays tend to be higher. That worked well. They also talked about the potential to spread out the height of individual floors, so those floors didn't feel as cramped, if you will. So those are both from the perspective of people who are using the building. Then there'll be other cases where a building that would have maxed out at under the existing heights at only four stories over a concrete base at 55 might be able to get to five stories under the concrete base. So those are some different ways that that additional height might play out. And would you, Coach Matt, would you add any more to that?
Thank you. It goes across the place. Yes. Would it also be encouraging more residential development then?
There may be cases where you wound up in a little bit. The 3.5 FAR is probably achievable in the 401. The 3.5 FAR in the 4/1 building type, I believe. So I think typically you will be able in the A to achieve the full FAR that you're allotted within that particular building one you have now. So my guess, and I could say this in every case, my guess is that typically I wouldn't expect you to see more residential. I think you can probably get that within the 55-foot height.
Back to you, Commissioner.
I just want to speak to the additional residential. So 5/1 projects in most of the region that where the multifamily tax exemption program is used, that is the key vehicle for providing that affordable housing. And so what I see is actually an opportunity that we would get our affordable housing, especially through the having the FAR exemption and use of the multifamily tax exemption program. To Commissioner Carlson's question, I see this as an opportunity not only to have a better form because of, as Mr. Stroh explained, allowing better floor to ceiling height at the ground floor without having to take that same height out of the units above. So imagine if somebody wants to allow, have like 15, 16 feet at the ground floor, well, they'll go in and have 8 foot or 7.5 foot ceilings in the units, which feel kind of cramped. But if you allow them to have that 15 foot floor, and you can go to 70 feet, you can actually have like 8.5 foot to 9 foot ceilings, which just makes a far more livable unit. So it's, you know, if you talk about livability, this, you know, just from what you actually get, this is from a product standpoint, this allows for livability.
Any other questions?
I just want to make a comment. I work right across the freeway from this park, and I pulled up pictures of McCormick Park so that I could sort of see and orient myself. I would need to do light and shadow. Like, how much shadow is this? Because it's north of it, the sun runs, you know, to the south of there. There's a beautiful park, and how much of that is going to be shaded by this change? I don't have the answer to that. I don't know, there's a built environment across the street, and I don't know how tall those are, so I don't have a frame of reference. Do you know how tall the buildings across the street from McCormick Park, the ones that are built now? Because they have the retail at the bottom and they have the residential above.
I don't know, but what I do know is that 112th is like four lanes and in some places a median, and what I do know is that the sun exposure that you would be talking about and having the concerns would be the sun from the south, and the southern sun tends to sit up here, and so I don't see, like, I'm just thinking of a triangle. I don't know that it is physically possible for a 55-foot or a 70-foot building sitting on the south side of 112 to cast a shadow that could touch McCormick Park.
I'm thinking of my you know, right triangle there, and if this is, you know, 50 feet, what do you got, 2.5? Yeah, so I don't know that it's physically possible. So
it sounds like on this topic, a few commissioners are looking for more information. So may I ask you, Commissioner Lang, to go through the rest of this if possible?
I can kind of see where this is going, so I'm doing my best. We've made a wonderful public hearing. We've received essentially the same comments from a large group of stakeholders over and over. I see these as big stones. Apparently, they need a lot more discussion. So the next thing is, I guess there is actually a pending motion. So.
Yes, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those against say nay.
Nay.
Abstain.
Abstain.
Look for more information and dialogue on this one.
So one of the big concerns that we've heard from the public as well as the commission is that if we are going to have a fee in lieu system, that the fee in lieu actually be put into a dedicated account and it be held so that it is only expended within the downtown sub area. And so I would have a motion that with regard to the amenity system, with any reference to a fee in lieu, that the fee in lieu be placed into a dedicated account and that that account only be expended for, and what I would propose, but I would take a friendly amendment to this, but I would propose that account be spent for the acquisition or improvement of publicly accessible open space within downtown.
Hold on a second, that one.
Excellent, thank you. Questions, comments, discussion? Not the case, please, motion more so.
I'm gonna throw that one to staff. Unintended consequences of doing something like this.
You know, honestly, I think the intent of the fee in lieu was that it was money that was spent on most important amenities for the downtown. So I really, I can't at the moment think of an unintended consequence here. The spirit of this always was the potential to gain money for amenities in the downtown that weren't occurring on site. So. I can't think of one. If there's any other staff here, have anything to add? So
I think right now the language we have is the collected in lieu fees will be used for public open space improvements by the city. Is that how it ended up? Well, it says by the city, so having the clarification that it is actually within the downtown sub area, you know, the more of a nuance issue.
Commissioner Walter, please, yes.
Just for transparency, I'd like to see it in a fund. I know there's other municipalities that do that. It's just when you have a big building that goes up, it's just really nice to be able to tell the people who are like, oh, we got this big building we never wanted. You can say, we have these records. This fund was created. This amenity was produced. And I think it just helps everybody understand that with what they maybe a perceived negative change, they actually got a positive change. And I just think it would just help the conversation so much more and be very transparent and clear.
Commissioner Barksdale, yes, please.
So for this fund, I remember we were talking about a different fund for the affordable housing that was shared. The funds were, it was a pool of funds shared by multiple municipalities.
Arch.
This is not that fund.
No.
This is a new fund that we've created.
We already have a fund similar to that, Red. Okay. It's just creating a new fund, and I think some additional accounting nuance that Commissioner Walters has indicated.
Thank you. Could I ask for a vote on this one? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Well, you got one.
You guys should feel like you're being heard.
Back to you, please.
All right. So I'm actually going to I will only present the final one, which is with regard to the early wins. We worked really hard on that. The CAC worked really hard on that. And I would like for the draft document staff to be directed to change the draft document back to reflect the early wins ordinance, which is ordinance 6277.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Where's the discussion? Hold on. No. I'm not understanding the reference. Was there a change from the draft ordinance?
There have been changes. We heard from Mr. Bennett on behalf of the BVA this evening about it. And so one of the challenges that this commission has had, frankly, and it's been raised many, 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 many times, is why don't we have a red line of the code so that we can actually see what's being changed in the current code? And this is a, this, what has happened with the early wins is that a year ago, we make a nice recommendation and the council unanimously puts in the law our unanimous recommendation, which by the way was a unanimous recommendation of unanimous recommendations from the CAC, and now we have a draft document in front of us where that, where some of those things have been changed.
Thank you for the clarification. So back to you. Do you have one more? All right, we will redo the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Passes. Thank you, Commissioner Lang.
Thank you. We winning twice in the last year.
Any of the commissioners with any actions, takeaways to wrap up based on the public hearing? Looks like not. If I could just...
I have one more.
Please.
Wasn't going to do this, but I'm going to do it. So does everybody have the handout that we received from BDR, John L. Scott?
Yeah.
Okay. So...
over on Main Street.
It looked like this is right at Main Street 112.
Yes.
Okay. So these two stakeholders have been here, I want to say, like every single meeting for at least a year, maybe longer, saying the same thing and pleading with us to provide staff direction. So I move, and the document that I'm referring to, I just want to make sure it's the same one. It says proposed code changes for the A3 and B3 perimeter overlay districts based on staff draft land use code dated 2/1/17. And this is a document, I believe they handed it out at the public hearing. And so I move that we direct staff to incorporate the changes reflected, again, I'm just gonna call it the JL Scott / PDR public hearing handout for consideration going forward.
I second the motion.
All right, we will have discussion.
Okay. Real questions, Tom, please.
Yep. Just in terms of illustrating Commissioner Lang's point, this is what the current code would allow. This is what they would like to do. So they are asking us to endorse changes that would allow them to do this, so they don't have the financial incentives to do that.
For the sake of clarity, people in the audience who may not know what you're referring to, would Commissioner Lang care to clarify and provide more details?
I would be happy to actually...
in a succinct manner.
No, I listen, you can ask for me to clarify or you can ask for me to be succinct, but you cannot ask for both. Okay. Essentially, what the proposal is would be to make a few modifications to, one, the dimensional chart in 2025A060B5 to insert a new section. The second would be to make some tweaks to the dimensional chart for the perimeter A3 and B3 district. And the overall issue is that the property has what I'll call split zoning on it. It has partly A3 and partly B3 zoning, which have some different heights and different FARs. And what they'd like to be able to do is essentially not increase the density, but share the density around both sites. And the way the code is currently written, apparently that is an impediment. What they have asked for is, in my mind, sort of analogous to what the Portland Group has asked for to try to address the situation in the northeast portion of downtown where they also have split zoning. And this is not an ask for additional density, but just a way to actually do massing on their sites so that, as Commissioner Carlson pointed out, they would have a project that may be more sort of viable and probably a project more in keeping with the fact that they're right across the street from the light rail station, or soon to be, and three blocks from another window.
And the reason for that is across the street, there used to be a neighborhood. There used to be houses. And so the code was written to reflect the fact that there was a residential neighborhood right across the street. Now there no longer is. It'll be the park and the station. And so they would like to have this be the gateway. And I think almost everyone has agreed this would be nice to see, but we would have to make some changes to accommodate that plan.
Is it time for discussion?
Please, yes.
I am fine with the proposed motion. However, I wanted on record that one thing that was brought to, I believe it was by the BDA, is looking at properties being built next to light rail, transit, and the FAR with respect to that. So I just want the commission to be aware there's further discussion to be had about FAR for the same site.
Thank you, Commissioner Morrison. I suggest we take a vote on this. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
I think we're good to go. So I believe that was your last item.
Thank you.
Thank you,
sir.
You're
going to be in the
Please.
I wasn't ready.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I do apologize. And I agree with everything except the change from 20-foot setback to 10-foot setback. Can I make a friendly amendment to make it leave that 20 feet? And
is that the 20-foot buffer along the perimeter?
Minimum setback from downtown boundary.
Yeah, so I agree with that, Commissioner Walter.
The boundary is on the other side of the street. They're
on the light rail side.
Yeah. The downtown boundary. And
then why would it be in the code if it's not right there?
If I may, this is what their argument is. The 20-foot setback from the downtown boundary was created 30-plus years ago to buffer single-family homes across Main Street, a condition that no longer exists. Our design has always indicated a 10-foot buffer as a compromise between the old code and the new urban edge created by the new light rail station across Main Street. To keep the 20-foot buffer is a suburban response to an urban edge and serves on to buffer houses that are no longer there and have been replaced by a park.
That
is their explanation.
Okay, excellent. Thank you for that. So there's a beautiful picture of, I mean, just the aesthetics of one versus the other make the bottom picture much more appealing. But just because they could build that doesn't mean that they would build that. So if they built something that was straight up with, I mean, it's 10 feet versus 20. And if everyone else is okay with that, I just wanted to call it out.
Thank you, Commissioner Walton.
I guess my only question, I've already voted on this, but have we opened the can of worms that we're going to be getting requests for 10-foot setbacks?
No.
Only across from my
station. And again, remember, this is not binding.
I know.
It's just they put back to the staff team and doesn't move forward, so.
There's another light rail station in downtown that has properties around it.
All right, any other commissioners with any items? If not, I don't see any. Two things, Commissioner Carlson. You had a comment earlier on about keeping it simple and not, how do you say it, overdoing the...
Well, I think in keeping with what Mayor Stokes was saying, you know, let's not have paralysis by analysis, and, you know, we've had all these meetings, we've had all this input, let's make some decisions and, you know, move forward.
Thank you. I just one comment, and then thank you for your patience, Dan. We'll just get you in a minute. I do want to make a humble request, which is we've had a number of these discussions, as Commissioner Carlson said, a number of discussions, and lots of feedback, lots of input. It is certainly your prerogative to ask for more information and for more data, for more analysis, but I strongly urge that we get to a point of closure. It's not going to be, you know, they say perfection is the enemy of good, and I think at this point, after years of work, we owe it back to staff and the council and the public to get this on moving. So with that, I'll give it back to you, Mr. Stroh. Again, thank you for indulging me. I wanted to make sure we had this passed through, so I'll give it to you now.
Thank you for that additional feedback. So I'm going to turn it over to Mike Brennan, who Open Service Director, who's going to take us to the next piece of this.
Right. So, thank you. So, Chair Davidos and Commissioner, so what we want to talk about just very quickly is essentially a process to move forward and see if we've got a structure that will help the Commission essentially digest and then move quickly to decision, which obviously is clearly the intent of the Commission to advance as quickly as we appreciate that, and we want to do what we can to help you accomplish that outcome. So just to touch on this very quickly, the public engagement, obviously we had significant public engagement, a major milestone with the public hearing that happened on the 8th. This just describes quickly how we captured that information and are continuing to deliver that to the Commission in your packet material, or in your guest packets and in packet materials. Obviously, the boards and other commissions may be weighing in. We've heard from the Parks Board this evening. Obviously, we'll capture that information and make it part of your record and conversation. And then we are still having conversations with stakeholders in one-on-one conversations and in meetings, and we'll certainly be transparent in bringing that results of the nature of those conversations for the public and your knowledge.
So we, which stakeholders? Just developers or community as well?
It's
both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So just real quickly on how we want to try to advance the information as it comes back to the packet. So looking for agreement that this would work for the Commission. So first, I just want to emphasize again what we're trying to do is be responsive to the kind of the interest that the Commission or preferences that the Commission expressed at the retreat last fall, and to be more efficient in how we do this, get agreement up front about the process and the way we'll be packaging the information so that when we begin down the path, obviously we've got a head start tonight, which we certainly appreciate, we're doing it in a way that everybody has a common understanding. We need to be thoughtful about how we continue to manage public input, both at the Commission meetings and otherwise, but again, it's important to maintain that open dialogue and transparency, so that's important. I think the key here is the approach on how we bring information back. So there are several topics that you began the conversation tonight, but you didn't have quite enough information to be confident to advance a decision. And so what we want to do is try to package it in a way that hopefully gives you what you need. So first of all, we want to, for each of these kind of big rocks topics, for as you're characterizing those, we want to try to summarize or collect the public input that's been provided from the stakeholders. So that you have that as part of the context that's in front of you. That there are, as necessary on some of these, you need analysis. So we would provide some staff kind of pros and cons or some additional background analysis to help the Commission kind of understand, as you mentioned, the kind of unintended consequences, if you want to call that, that might, or the consequences that might come from one choice or another. And we also want to set up alternatives so that you have something to react to instead of trying to do it on the spot. So it's a starting place for your conversation, and we would do some analysis on those alternatives and bring those forward for your consideration. And then, of course, we would be looking for the panels for the Commission's direction, and then we take that direction and translate that into the draft code, and then the draft code that's in front of you. You heard the Council's interest tonight about trying to move expeditiously through this to get to a decision. And obviously, heard the mayor and are advancing that. And
trust me, I want to get this done as soon as possible.
Yes, we're sensing urgency, so we got it. So we'll, like I said, certainly respect that and try to do what we can to help you accomplish your work. And we did propose a schedule. Who's best to speak to the outline? Maybe I'll start here. So this is a schedule that kind of captures some of the major topical areas, and we'll speak to a little bit more detail on those topical areas and how we bring those to you in packages in just a minute. We do have a little bit of a challenge based on April 12th. There was some conversation at the last commission meeting, public hearing, about availability of commission members, also availability of the staff on the April 12th, and whether that's a regular meeting, whether you wanted to push that meeting a week out and meet on the 19th in lieu of that meeting. So we'll come back to that in a minute. We do want to advance these kind of sites or the topical areas, the first kind of big rocks of the incentive zoning, kind of the tower design, separation of building, like the envelope elements of the draft code. There are some site-specific topics. You dealt with one of those this evening that you heard from various downtown property owners that have some interests that they're trying to communicate and help them with their projects. There's trying to bring some closing to some of the topics, and then there's some process area issues that are process-related issues that need to kind of move along. And then there are some, call them the little rocks, I guess. There will be some minor topics that probably won't require a lot of analysis, but we'll just need some direction to finalize the final recommendations in the code. And then finally get to the draft transmittal and ensuring that the commission is comfortable with that transmittal that would then be communicated by the chair to the council. So as far as the schedule, there is one additional meeting included in here. That's the May 3rd meeting, which would be adding one, and a question about whether or not we want to move the April 12th meeting to the 19th. So I guess the question to the commission on the schedule is this something that will work for the commission? We think we can deliver the products that you need to advance your conversation and decision making, but it does require some movement on your part.
Thank you. If I could just, again, appreciate the detailed walkthrough and the thought process behind this. But maybe two thoughts. One is potentially perhaps ask the commissioners to try to schedule time with staff in terms of analysis. Because I realize that each of us have different needs in terms of the data and the analysis. And so perhaps we could expedite by using the time with the staff team. The second request would be, perhaps we could combine the site-specific and the closing and process and thereby save one particular instance. I would assume that the closing process is probably not, I'm making a big assumption here, a proposal to perhaps combine those two into one session.
We can put together a package of the complete package of information that would help the commission move through that as quickly as the commission is able.
Thank you.
And we could leave that May 3rd meeting as a potential, and if we need it to do it, if we're moving quickly through it.
Yeah. And again, in the interest of expediting and obviously getting to closure as soon as we possibly can.
Yes.
Mr. Cullen, please.
Thank you, Chair Davidos. Just a couple of other things with respect to your scheduling in the next quarter. April the 26th, you will be doing a study session on a plan amendment for the Bellevue Technology Center. I'm expecting you're going to get a fair number of people. So that will take up a good part of that meeting. Beyond May 24th, June 14th is going to be a public hearing for threshold review on the Bellevue Technology Center. So just giving you some bookends to this. And June the 28th is probably going to be a study session on this. So you won't be able to continue into June. You're going to be on other business at that point, and that's mandated business. So we have to be very cognizant of that.
A good forcing function to that. Thank you. Mr. Brooks, and Mr. Walton, please.
Thanks. So in terms of the approach, and it says detailed review of public comment, where's that public comment coming from? Are you going out like requesting it and then getting it back?
So it would be collecting the public comment that we've received so far.
Yeah.
Primarily it's from the public hearing, the comments, and communications that the commission received, bring that together in that for that topic so that you've got that kind of summarized.
I see. So you're not going out to get more public comment, is that what you're saying?
Right.
You're engaging with stakeholders, but you're not going to get more comment?
Well, I think you'll continue to get comment here. One of the thoughts was that as these topics are set up and they're scheduled in advance, then the stakeholders who have an interest in that can be prepared the night the commission discusses it to come during the oral communications and share any additional information that they'd like to share at that time.
I see. So stakeholder engagement is during the meeting, not before or like outside of the meeting?
It's actually.
Okay.
So we are meeting with, we've met with Bellevue Tower residents, yeah. We've met with some of the developers, mm-hmm. on site-specific changes. We have some ideas as well for meeting the requirements that the developers have said are necessary, mm-hmm. that might knit into the code a little bit better. We will continue to do that. And then, like I indicated, as we go forward with an identification of what topics might be available, people might be able to pick the meetings that they come to with more specificity and then limit their comments to just those topics so we can create some kind of commission efficiencies in that.
Yeah, it'd be great to know like what that meeting schedule is going to be, so if we have any questions for the stakeholders that you're going to be meeting with, we can provide those to you in advance.
No, not to do that.
That'd be great.
Thank you. Commissioner Wolf. Have you had a question?
I did, and I was very busy listening to Commissioner Barksdale. Oh, threshold review. threshold review. So there was a document that came out, and I have since then filed it, that referred to the threshold review, the different questions, as being part of the final review, and yet in a year past, it was part of the preliminary review, and that felt a little awkward. So I'd like it clarified if the 5 or 7 criteria are part of preliminary or final. When I read the document, it seemed a lot more appropriate to have it be part of the final review after we've heard public comment or had a hearing and been able to talk. Then we know how things fit into those criteria. That seemed like a way more logical order. So could you clarify if it's part of the preliminary or the final threshold review?
The
criteria.
We'll talk more about it on the 26th to prep you and get feedback in terms of the types of information that would be important for you.
April
26th, in preparation for what will be the public hearing in June.
Okay,
but just briefly, it's for you to make a determination or a recommendation to council whether or not the plan amendment should be included in the annual plan amendment work program.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So just real quick, a little bit more on the themes and categories and how we were proposing to try to gather these. I don't know if Carol can speak to
this. So these actually start on page 3 of your packet materials, and in what we promised the commission is we come back with some themes and categories for batching the comments that were received. So the matrix that starts on page 3 essentially is a compilation of written communications that were received prior to the public hearing, written communications received since then, and the public hearing minutes. Mm-hmm. And we divided them into several themes and assigned them to dates. You've captured several of them in the conversation. Tonight we did have some miscellaneous topics to move through. You have the bandwidth to continue to work on those. They're just a few. What's worth noting is we had some miscellaneous topics. We had already identified incentive zoning and tower design and building height as probably big rocks that would require additional information. You've requested that. We will obviously bring that back. We also have district and site-specific topics. We will bring back some analysis of what's been requested in that regard as well, even though you did give us direction on the A3, B3 changes that have been requested by John Scott. And then the closing process topics you had referred to earlier, Chair Davidoff, and those were essentially at the end, there were some kind of closure and tying up. So there were several things that didn't fit neatly into a code process or topic, such as kind of the scope of administrative departures. That's been an issue that we wanted to talk about, whether there's a super bonus or not. I know the residents have been interested in that and the developers. Kind of the affordable housing issue, you provided some direction with that on that for us this evening as well. And then there has been some questions about the state environmental policy review that has been undertaken and a request for a transportation study before we proceed further. So we were going to discuss that just as kind of a closing handoff before your recommendation is final. So with that in mind, the topics that are listed on page 3 through 6 were then kind of batched into categories that are up on the screen. The complex topics were ones that we identified where there was not consensus, essentially, in the comments that were received by the Planning Commission. So there could be stakeholders that were on different sides of that issue. And that probably warranted, to honor the comments received by the stakeholders, some additional analysis to support the Planning Commission conversation and ultimate direction back to staff. The FAR and the building height and some of those other issues were identified as those complex issues that would require some additional analysis to kind of lay out the pros and cons of both routes. The less complex topics were ones that might be easier to resolve, but might not have a high level of controversy, might not require a lot of additional analysis, but they were batched in a way such that that we would move those forward. Kind of, they're smaller blocks, medium-sized blocks, or little blocks. And then there was a batch of clarifications and errata. I did note that, for instance, Carl Vanderhoek spoke this evening about a topic that he had identified as one to be fixed in alley topic earlier. That is actually included on the errata sheet, and unless we hear otherwise, we plan to include those in future drafts of the code, just corrections for that errata sheet. So those are the topics and themes, and we have several that of miscellaneous topics that we could probably move through quickly tonight if the Planning Commission has the desire to do that. And then we can kind of check the box on the miscellaneous topics, and if the plan for scheduling is amenable to you, we would then be back on April 19th if there's going to be a conflict with spring break, or April 12th, depending on the direction you receive.
Thank you. And is page 3 the list you were looking to run?
Page 3 is the list. It's on page 3 through 6. And that essentially describes all of the major things we heard from the public. It doesn't attribute whether the theme was I want more parking or less parking, for instance. It just identifies parking as an issue. And then it identifies the commenters that essentially made those statements, so that the Planning Commission, if they so desire, can actually go back and look at the letters and comments received and find the nuance of the suggestion that was made by those commenters on that topic.
Thank you. And was your intent to run through all of these pages or only page
3? My intent was to run through only the ones that were identified on page 3, which are part of March 22nd, and there were some miscellaneous topics that we thought did not require any further analysis, and we can move forward quickly.
Thank you. If I could propose, maybe you would be more, you would maybe guiding us through the list of on page 3, and then let's see how far we can make progress.
Certainly. Well, we have that on the...
just one more. Before... we leave the decision on the 12th or the 19th is something we probably need to decide.
So yes, we'll have to come back at that, Mr. Cullen, before we wrap up this evening.
Okay. Just want to note that it's 9 o'clock, and we were supposed to end the section at 9 o'clock. So I don't know if we have about 15 minutes.
Technically, we put the minutes ahead,
yeah.
So we don't cover it. So we're going to try. So thank you for the call. Yes. So yes, we will close on the dates for sure. You will get back to you now before that session. Yes.
So the substantive topics that we were going to walk through this morning contain or this evening. already looking at included the definition of active uses. We heard that it wasn't clear enough. That was a comment that we received, I think, from Wallace Properties. The parking standards, we received comments on that issue that related to both the ratios, flexibility that was allowed for modifying ratios, and the visibility of parking when you were driving on the streets. We also had open space cap for additional height. So that open space cap was the, there was a request to cap the amount of open space that would be required on any one super block. And then there were a couple of clarifications that we were just going to alert you through about. I think we can get through those pretty perfunctorily if you'd like to proceed.
Please, yes, thank you.
So if you want to turn to page 15 of your packet, we're going to start off with the definition of active uses. This was a new definition that we added in this code update. It's a really important definition. It in some ways replaces the old way of talking about retail uses or pedestrian-oriented frontage, that the main comment we've gotten through the CAC process and the commission process was we don't want to end up with empty retail frontages that were either bonus or gotten through exemptions where now we can't allow it. So we put a definition of active uses in the code. You can see it in the middle of page 15 there in your packet. The public comments that we got were really saying that it still lacked some clarity, and they actually wanted to suggest that instead of listing a few things that weren't active uses, that we go and try and list off the whole laundry list of things that are active uses. The approach that actually we took, and I think we described to the commission before, was we intentionally wanted to provide more flexibility on this and didn't list out all the specific active uses. So instead, we have characteristics of active uses that say it supports pedestrian activity, high degree of visual and physical interaction between the building and the public realm. And then we did list out a few things that were active uses. So our recommendation is, frankly, to stay with the definition as proposed. Mr. Bob Wallace did suggest that actually one of the things that we mentioned as not being appropriate, he did think was appropriate. So that would be a change if the commission thought that was warranted. He mentioned the private indoor amenity space, and in his eyes thought that should be not called out as something that wasn't an active use. So we basically have cited the public comments, given you a couple of different alternatives, done a bit of analysis, and our recommendation is alternative one, stay with current language, but clearly if you feel like you have enough information to give us direction, that would be fine. So it could either be alternative one, two, or if you have a different direction.
Comments, questions, clarifications? If not, I'll jump in. I certainly would recommend option one, which is what you recommend. I think when we call examples out, then we run the risk of it's not called out explicitly. We're going to find those edge cases, so I certainly would recommend staying with one, but open to other ideas, thoughts. Commissioner Lang, please.
Well, since everybody disagreed with me, Mr. Chair, I'm going to have to disagree with you. One of the fundamental problems with the pedestrian-oriented frontage and like this concept of active uses is like it means anything and nothing. It's just, you know, it's active. Well, that's just not active enough. Maybe that's too active. I don't know. And so I think that we need to have, in all instances, a code that an ordinary citizen could look at and say, I know exactly what that means. And in order to know exactly what that means, you should have things that are absolutely unequivocally things that nobody's going to argue aren't active uses, and things that are. And so, and this is just kind of like our use tables in the zoning code, where if you don't know, you know, there's a value, I think somebody pointed this out, if you've been Commissioner Walter, to leaving even lines or rows in use tables of things that are prohibited, just so that people know, like, that's prohibited. And guess what? Anything like that is prohibited, too. And so my recommendation would actually be to have the staff go back and take some time
to actually list every single use that is an active use and every single use that isn't an active use. So nobody has to come in and say, well, I mean, I walked from my car to use this thing. I mean, that was active and or whatever it is. Like, so there's no disagreement and nobody has to worry or wonder what is and isn't an active use.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Mike. I'm glad you're sitting with me. So, but we are the domain expert on this space, believe me.
Actually, just for a question.
I welcome other thoughts and comments on this. Please,
Commissioner Mike. Would it be enough just to add a list of prohibited uses and implicitly everything else is allowed?
I'd be fine if you said, you know, the following whatever uses are not active uses and everything else is, or every other permissible use is, I'd be fine with that. I'd be fine, you know, because one of the things is, like, obviously an active use needs to be something that's permitted up in the use chart itself, right? So we've already, like, significantly limited the universe of things that could be an active use just because of what is permissible or not. So it's not like it's a huge list. So I think, you know, one way of dealing with it would be to just have, I know we don't like to have, like, 47 footnotes, but one thing we could do is we could have a footnote in the use table that just says this is not an active use for purposes of this definition, or we could have a footnote that says this is an active use. But I think that it is really important that nobody needs to have a discussion beyond tonight about what is and isn't an active use.
I would welcome that. Commissioner Morrison, please.
Well, I'm going to ask staff to clarify, because from reading this, I understood alternative option one to mean that it is currently listed on the code, whatever is not an active use.
What we have goes
to what Commissioner Lane just said.
We already
have that.
Well, just to be fair, I think the intent of the way it was written up was to give some characteristics of active uses with some flexibility and to list out some things that are typically not active uses. So it wasn't intended to be the exhaustive list of things that weren't active uses. That would be a much longer list. The current code, just for what it's worth, it did attempt to define pedestrian-oriented frontage and retail spaces and had a list of about 20 things. So that amount of uses was cited as an issue because there would be other things that would come up that the developer would want to put in the space, but then clearly wouldn't meet that definition. So if you were to list out all the things that were active uses, it would be quite a bit longer than 20 uses.
If I could add, we took this definition from the City of Toronto, and one of the reasons we went this way was because there was some difficulty with the oriented frontage, and there were issues with banks, travel agencies, those kinds of things. So we wanted to make sure that we included those kinds of uses so that those were available to use as sort of that active use. And one of the things that we added to ensure that this was, we were sort of trying to go a little closer to a form-based code. And what I mean by that is that we added a lot of things that were sort of transparency based in the design guidelines. So you'll see a lot of things where we're asking for ways that you can see in and that you're connected to the sidewalk so that you can see the activity that's going on in there, or that you can open up the cafe door so that you have a sidewalk, or you can have the sidewalk sale, that kind of thing. I understand that there are, you know, that there's some concern with this definition, but to have a list of all the things that are not permitted or all the things that are permitted, you're going to miss something, guaranteed. So that's the difficulty with that.
So, and if you don't, you're going to have to hire me or somebody else when you go to put something in and somebody does this, not active enough. I mean, seriously, I've wrestled professionally with the pedestrian-oriented frontage thing, like, in my professional capacity, and I can guarantee you there are people sitting in here tonight who have done one of these a bunch of times saying, how is that not pedestrian-oriented enough? So again, the use table is not that long. I think that there's a way that we can just go through and delineate what uses would qualify for this, and then through the process of the code interpretation provisions which have been added into this, we can say, well, this use that's not listed in the table would be permitted because it's like this, and it would be considered active because it's like this.
So let's close on this one. Which way do we as the commission believe? I certainly am willing to be corrected. I then asked for two.
So I was corrected five times. So,
do we agree with Commissioner Lang's recommendation?
I agree that we should have something in there that provides clarification and some transparency, whether it's what can be used, not used, I don't care necessarily either way, but something, like we said earlier, the common person or a potential developer has a better idea of active versus non-active. I just think guidance would be good.
So if I could, you would like more precision in terms of more clarity?
More clarity, yeah.
Mr. Walter, please.
Is there a way to... kind of put me right in the middle. Is there a way to have an other category and the definition of who would make that decision? If there were a list and it were incomplete, but you can see the types of things, so you would have the things for sure that are, the things for sure that aren't, there's going to be something missing, and then if there could be something prescriptive about what you do.
That's a reasonable proposal. So if I could summarize, thank you for your question. Again, I think what we're saying is, as the commission, we would like you to be more clarity, more precision. And so leaning towards Commissioner Lyons' recommendation, we're open to your...
Yeah. So I think we have enough direction. Current language, not appropriate. Let's go to something more towards alternative two, and I think we have enough notes to...
Thank you.
Have some of that too.
I would just say, maybe to achieve the same outcome that you currently have up here of maintaining flexibility and not being... limiting that flexibility. I'd say probably a list of what's not as opposed to what is.
Say that, I'm sorry, I missed what you said.
So adding specific examples of what's not, what does not qualify versus what does qualify.
Just to clarify, I think we had earlier feedback as well from Commissioner Walter that maybe we should look at what is in, what is out.
I heard that.
And what is TPD as well. So really, more clarity we can provide.
Sort of. I heard that. So what I was suggesting as an alternative was, I think we do want to maintain flexibility, and I think we can do that and add precision by just having what's out and not what's in, because what's in is already limited.
It's arguable. I want to respect both the feedback, yours as well as Commissioner Walters. We'll give it back to you. I think that's more clarity, more precision.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you would like to turn your page to page 16 of the packets. Next topic is parking standards. So this, if you remember correctly, the Downtown Livability CAC actually didn't have much recommendations relating to parking. They wanted to defer most all of it to a comprehensive downtown parking study. There has been comment about more flexibility in parking, and we had some language in the draft land use code that related to being able to do a parking study and basically go above or below the parking standard. So you did want to essentially get more public feedback to make your final decision on parking. So to summarize the public comment, we did get input from the community or from stakeholders about just a straight reduction of minimum parking to 0.5 stalls per unit within a quarter mile of the light rail stations. And I'll show you on a map in a couple minutes about what that means. This would generally be in areas that the minimum is one right now, just order of magnitude. Also, a few comments about we shouldn't really do anything relating to parking until we can do a comprehensive parking study. So our city council has put money in their adopted budget over the next 2 years to do a comprehensive parking study. They have not given staff direction or any indication about when they might want to initiate it. But it is budgeted to do a comprehensive parking study in the future for downtown specifically. There were comments about sometimes actually doing the adequate amount of parking that we say is needed in the code can limit a project size. So there were concerns about some a disconnect between straight standards and a code and actually being able to do a feasible project. And then quite a few comments about providing flexibility on requirements. So that's kind of a recurring theme that the CAC and the commission has heard on a number of different topics, was increased flexibility. And then there was two terms. One was, they both related to a parking study. So the one term was actual parking demand. People were questioning, how can you do a study and figure out what actual demand is when it's a future thing that you're trying to study? So we have some suggested language that we think might be better for that. And then there was also a term called compatible jurisdictions that we're going to suggest we say comparable jurisdictions would probably be a more appropriate way to refer to that. So it's essentially looking at cities that are of a same size, have similar transit access, have similar mode split, have the characteristics of Bellevue to be comparable to Bellevue. So that's what we heard from the community. The alternatives that we have are to retain the language that we have in the code to essentially allow a developer at their option to do a parking demand analysis is what it's called. That would be alternative one. For each alternative, we do think that it would be better to clean up the language for actual parking demand to say rather estimated parking demand, and then for comparable or compatible to be comparable. Alternative two would be to retain that language in there to do a comprehensive or a parking demand analysis for a project, but set some lower limit on how low you could actually go through that study, because I think there was concern both at the commission and in the public about if somebody did a study, would they be suggesting I don't need any parking, or a really low number that potentially would cause some issues. So we tried to both take into account what the public had said with having lower ratios down to 0.5, but then also marrying that up with what our parking study would be. And option three would be essentially the idea that we put something out there for public comment. We got comment back. Commission's still not comfortable with having this ability to vary from the parking standards, and we just want to eliminate that from the draft code and basically get rid of it. So it's not something that's in there now, except for unspecified uses like hotel. You do need to do a parking study, but the idea that you're able to do it for any use is something that if you aren't comfortable, then you probably shouldn't recommend having it in the code. So the analysis we did really focused on this common theme of parking flexibility. We also acknowledged the concern of going too low can actually potentially add to congestion. So we heard from the commission that they didn't want to have buildings having not enough parking and then people driving around the block, just adding to our overall congestion. And also that this parking demand study really is a fact-based approach that is used for hotel uses right now. So it's not something new that nobody's ever done before or submitted to the city. It's something that we have done. Our recommendation, for what it's worth, is alternative two. So to keep the ability to do a parking demand study with some limits on how low you could go. Just a bit of quick analysis to show you. We, since we prepared the packet, we went back and looked at the 47 past residential projects. So basically going back to 1987, going up to 2015, you can see the array of what we've had developed. So majority are market rate apartment projects, some condos, some affordable housing projects, some senior projects. 12 of the 42 market rate projects, so essentially the apartments or the condos, were doing a parking ratio of just over one. So if you envision the minimum in many zones is one, and they're just doing a hair above one, to staff, it shows that at least there's some desire to go pretty low, you know, towards the minimum of what they need to be required to do. And I'm going to show you in a minute, there looks like there's a general trend towards at least residential wanting to do lower amounts of parking in downtown Bellevue. And specifically since 2010, if you just look at the 8 apartment projects, 2 of them have done right at the minimum, 1.0, and then the average for them is only 1.15. So if the min is 1, max is 2, they're coming in towards the lower end of that. So this graphic right here just shows all the 47 projects from 1985 to 2015. Apartments are the squares, condos are the Diamonds, the affordable projects and senior projects, they're below one stall per unit because by code you can actually do lower amounts of parking for senior and affordable projects, so they actually do take advantage of that and do lesser parking. And you can see that over time, especially getting close to 2015, we have a general trend towards going definitely below 1.5 stalls per unit and kind of bottoming out at the one per unit. So I think this was just intended to show that there's a development community out there that's wanting to go lower, and we also have been getting comments about would Bellevue ever consider going lower than one per unit in downtown Bellevue.
So that's just the residential piece. What about the commercial? Yep. Do you have that analysis, the commercial, the office, the hospitality, restaurants, hotels, what their studies are showing for parking demand too?
Yeah.
Oh, so, I have a question before we leave here though. What was the motivation? Do you have any idea of like what encouraged the two condos and the apartment at the top to provide two? Was it just a higher price property?
Two is the maximum. So you, by definition, except if you're in the O1 or O2. So interestingly, O1 and O2, which is where Bellevue Towers is and others, the minimum parking right now on the books is zero. So you could potentially do zero in the O1 and O2 for residential. The ones that are doing two, the max we have is 2.0 right now, so you cannot do above that. So this red line is not to go above.
Yep.
Really the motivation for that was looking at what their product was, trying to sell it, and having, if they thought all their customers were going to come in and say they were looking for two parking spaces per condo, then that's what they'd probably build.
Hmm. It'd be interesting to know like how the economics of that project compare with the ones that are trending lower, just to see if there's.
Mm-hmm. And we did this mainly to look at over time, of seeing even the condos are going towards lower amounts because they feel like their customers aren't necessarily demanding as much. Would you like to go back?
If you had a question from Commissioner Hillhorst and then Commissioner Ryan, please.
So I did ask my question. Do you have that data available here? The data that I asked for?
I do. I have a slide on office.
Okay. So you have to show that to its presentation. Same thing. Okay. That was what I asked.
Mr. Lane, please.
So this was going to be in my big rocks, but I didn't bring it. But I would just kind of point out a couple things. So first of all, in looking at the alternatives, I think you really need to combine the language and some of the changes in alternative one into alternative two. And I think that there's an element of what I'll call alternative three, which is eliminate the ability for the director to modify that. There's an element of that that I think needs to be incorporated. And my view of it is looking at page 89, which is where subsection H is and the director's authority to modify. I think it's good that that there is an administrative departure process that allows for this, especially because we are seeing changes in mode splits and all these other things. But there's a couple things. So one, I think that we need to make it clear that the director doesn't have the authority to modify visitor or guest parking. That was one of the big things that we heard from the community. There is a footnote on page 86 that talks about visitor parking. We're not here to wordsmith tonight. We're going to need to wordsmith that, but I think that it's really important that there's always going to be some visitor parking, so that this isn't going to touch that. The second thing is, I think that, and this goes all the way back, we had this really great parking panel at the CAC, and we had Bellevue stakeholders. I think we had somebody from Keppler Development Co. We had John Sue. We had David Schooler, who I see in the audience tonight. We also had a gentleman from Portland. And what was fascinating was I've never seen John Sue, somebody from Kemper's Place, and Mr. Schooler all agree so much and disagree with the gentleman from Portland on a lot of things. And what came out of that was that if we're going to do parking studies or we're going to be making changes for our parking requirements in Bellevue, these need to be based on Bellevue-specific studies. And so this idea of a comparable or a compatible jurisdiction definitely would go against what we heard from stakeholders at the CAC level. And so I would suggest that we not have that here because
then we start arguing about what is a comparable jurisdiction and all the rest of it. The second thing is, I think that it's important, and I would just kind of use the city's critical areas ordinance as an example of this. When we're talking about a parking demand analysis being provided, this needs to be provided by a professional licensed engineer, professional traffic engineer, and I'm sure that's what the intent is, but we need to make sure that the code says that. We need to make sure that the code makes some reference to a standard. Typically, there's the things, the ITE manual. So I think that the code should actually reference like the manual, you know, as it exists or is hereafter amended, so that there's an sort of an objective document. I think that the idea of demand too, and if you look at parking, I give people a hard time about this because there's a thing, and I wish Commissioner Barksdale were here because he'd appreciate this, but you can't sample on the dependent variable. So by dependent variable, we're saying, like, what's the demand? So if I have some traffic consultant come in and say, well, you know, I went over to Seattle and I looked at all these multifamily projects by light rail stations, and none of them had any parking in it, so therefore the demand is zero, that would be, you know, that doesn't actually tell you what the demand was for parking. You'd probably find out what the real demand was if you walked around the neighborhood and talked to the people who've been chasing the people that live in the apartment building without any parking, who've been parking in front of their houses. And so I think that it's really important that this concept of demand be in this. Finally, with regard to the director's authority, I think that, and I don't know how this could be phrased a little bit better, we might change the word may to shall, because if somebody comes in and they have complied with having a professional engineer put together a study, it's actually a Bellevue-specific study, so it's really looking at this market, they've complied with professional methodology and they've asked to change the parking ratio, I'm uncomfortable with the idea that the director could say, that's nice work, but I'm just not going to let you do it. Which is not to say that there aren't methodological problems with parking studies, but there needs to be, we shouldn't be in a situation where somebody goes through the trouble of doing this and actually does it right and it's objective, and then they're just not, it's not branded. If there's something methodologically wrong, I'm not suggesting that in any way, but I just think that incorporating elements of all three of these alternatives here is the surest way. The final thing I would just throw out here is that, you know, there's a lot of talk about changing parking ratios, required parking ratios. So one other thing, I think this same methodology should be used to allow somebody to increase their parking.
It is.
Okay, just making sure. All right, and then, there it is. And then the final thing is, at the CAC, there's a lot of talk about, well, what's gonna happen when light rail is here? Well, the CAC says, we're not gonna count our chickens before it's hatched. Once light rail's here, it's actually operational, and we see what the impact that has on parking demand and other things, that would be the time to go back and use that as a basis to adjust parking ratios. But to do that before we actually see that the promise of light rail has been fulfilled would be, counting your chickens before they hatch. Anyway.
Thank you. Carlson, please.
Well, I wish there was an alternative four.
Leave it be.
That is the status quo would be essentially retaining. It would be retaining the status quo, and we would only be using it on unspecified.
With exceptions, you see, the reason, going back to what I said 2.5 hours ago, the current code, the current plan has served Bellevue very well. In a number of ways, and transportation is a good example of that. You know, Bellevue is more pedestrian friendly than it used to be. Bellevue is easier to bike around, and is getting more so. Bellevue is more transit friendly than it was 30 years ago, and it's still a city that is driver friendly. Thanks in large part to some of the changes that have been made, Northeast 4th, Northeast 6th, et cetera. And the the basis for Bellevue's success, going even back before 30 years ago, is that there's always been ample, plentiful parking. There are some people who are not crazy about the automobile, who don't want Bellevue to be friendly for automobiles, and would like to constrain the supply of parking to make it less convenient and less pleasant. Of course, what that will really mean is more congestion all around. When you hear about, you know, lower requirements and, you know, changing our standards to compatible jurisdictions and more flexibility, that's all code for less accessible parking in Bellevue. We don't need less accessible parking in Bellevue. We need to maintain our standards of ample, plentiful parking. I know there's some developers who'd love to save some money by not supplying the parking, but that is not, to use Commissioner Lang's catchphrase, Bellevue specific. That's not how Bellevue was built. That is not why Bellevue has thrived. And I hope that we make it clear that we don't want to go away and abandon that standard.
I think we've gotten a good cross-section of feedback from the commission on the topic of parking, so I'll leave it back to you, Mr. King, perhaps to come back with both Commissioner Lang's as well as Commissioner Carlson's feedback around the language. I do want to pause, Mr. Stroh. I think we're well past the half hour. I would recommend, given the lateness of the evening, that perhaps we should come back to the parking and maybe start with that next time and proceed from there. If you're
We can certainly do that.
Thank you. And again, I do appreciate your patience and humoring me in terms of letting you work with the commission early on. So thanks again. I think as you said, it's been a long journey. Really appreciate the support of the partnership, and obviously we'll get there one session at a time. Right? We'll get there.
Well, certainly, thank you in the spirit of trying to move things forward. Like, certainly, that's the message that we got, and that's certainly what we were hoping for. So, thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
We do think we need some closure on the date, and we will return to you.
Yes,
so April 12th meeting is over Bellevue School District break, and so we would need to understand people's availability during that week and whether we should pick an alternative.
Perhaps maybe at this point, let's just quickly go around the table in terms of availability for the 12th of April. So I'm in town and available.
I am in town as well.
I'm likely
available.
I'm
tentatively
available.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Rustin,
I'm tentative.
So we may have five commissioners, it appears. So I would suggest we schedule this thing, and perhaps as we get closer to your clarity, you could inform us. I see Commissioner Lang smiling.
Or should we also ask if everybody's available on the 19th?
Close an alternate? The 5th, which would, since March is really long, we'd have a good long break before that. Things might be still fresh, and then that gives us more weeks for.
That's a fine proposal as well. Anybody who would not be available on the 5th? I think we have a resolution there.
If I may, Chair, just one question. Will staff be ready to send stuff out in a week? Because it's a week turnaround. It's not. It's a short term turnaround for getting the materials together and sending it out for April the 5th. I just wanted to be sure.
Well, it's 2 weeks. It would be 2 weeks, the 29th.
No, it goes out the 29th. The package should be ready to go 1 week from today.
Okay.
Meaning that all the analysis or whatever that was coming forward.
That's our standard break, is 2 weeks in between.
Yes.
That was my.
Would that be
next Friday? Not have the couple of big rocks ready to go on. so we can accelerate that.
Okay.
Because we were going to come back with analysis. We were going to come back with some comparative projects, some other information that we've heard back from you would be helpful, that we've heard back from the public would be helpful. And we simply can't get that done between now and next Wednesday. We need to be submitted.
So perhaps we should look at the 19th of April, and let's go back to it. Would we have, anybody have a constraint for the 19th of April? I guess we have another date for you, April 19th. I think we're closer. Thank you.
If I may, just one other thing, just a reminder, the 26th, you will not be able to use that entire agenda for downtown livability. Plan amendments will be put up first on that agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you again. Thank you very much. So moving on, I think we have all right.
Mr. Devila.
Before staff leaves, I just need clarification. Are they going to come back and continue what's in the packet tonight, including this letter that we received from Mr. Smith? Because I had a question about that.
I think staff's done. Correct. You're moving it to public comment. Correct.
Yes, but I think the question was around clarifying that one, right?
Yeah, because there was a letter that we received from Mr. Smith about the legalities of one aspect of the amenity incentive system, and I was hoping to have a discussion about that. So is that going to come back to us?
I think it's a good question. I'm going to have to maybe let's follow up on this one, because I think we've lost the staff team at this point. But I will.
No,
but
we will, I think they would have to come back to the table to do that.
Yeah, perfect. So let's. Mr. Cullen, perhaps maybe you could take a note of that and we can provide the clarity for Commissioner Morrison now.
I'm sorry, could you express that?
We received a letter from Mr. Alex Smith from Davis Wright Domain about the legality of one of the amenity incentive system that we have, and I was hoping to have a discussion with staff and the commission about that. So if staff could.
So with respect to Alex Smith's letter on the legality of the incentive system, to bring it back for discussion.
Thank you. Moving on to public comment then, if there is anybody in the audience who would like to use the public comment time. Yes, sir. Oh, yes, ma'am. Sorry.
May I have a question? Pamela Johnson, 3741, 1.7 Avenue. On all of these issues, I just want to make sure that there's been a comparable study with Bell-Red, that we're not doing something different in downtown that would be lower standards, I guess, not quite the thing, but like Bell-Red doesn't have a different in the wrong ways. So, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, sir. Can you give us your name and address again, please?
Yes. Jonathan Cagle, 9242 Vineyard Crest, Bellevue. Just had a comment on maybe a little bit of a structural comment. Commissioner Carlson brought up a great point. Hey, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And then that was followed up by Commissioner Lang, who mentioned that there were real concerns about a down. Down zone, and as a result, there were concerns that if we didn't set that 90% threshold, some parcels of property might be down zoned, and that was sort of a safe threshold. At the same point, there are concerns that some members of the community have that there would be an up zone. So there may need to be a different way of looking at things, and I'll throw these out, a couple of different ways of looking at it, one of which is maybe to keep the existing code as is and then add an incentive system on top. And I know the current code is kind of ugly, but it seems that throwing that all out, cleaning it all up, may cause a lot of problems. It seems like there are some legal challenges, there are some other concerns, and that by leaving it intact and then adding a bonus system, you could separate what's new from what's old, and if someone chooses not to take part in that system, then there's been no change. If you like the code that's there, you can keep it. Or another way, perhaps, would be to keep two parallel codes. Keep the existing code as is on the books and have new code and classic code and let people choose among those two codes. And at some point, if everyone chooses new code, the other one can be phased out or could be cleaned up. And by keeping the existing code, I think a lot of the concerns the community seems to be expressing can be perhaps minimized or mitigated. And it also might help make things a little bit cleaner by having a much smaller group of changes or having two side-by-side parallel paths. Just a suggestion.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And I can just, I have to make a comment. Talking about classic code and new code, you must have been a developer at some time in your career, I assume.
Yeah.
A software developer, yes.
I worked at Microsoft for a few years.
There we go. Thank you.
Long and prosper.
Any other public comment? Yes.
My name is Bill Herman. I live at 10700 Northeast 4th Street. So some comments. I really did not like the addressing affordable housing through FAR, a 1.0 FAR increase. Seems like this is like the wrong thing to try to address affordable housing with, and the wrong venue. Affordable housing and a lot of this livability update should be mobility and transportation is our big problem, and we should be addressing this. And so if we could somehow tie affordable housing in through some type of employer program so that we know that the people who are taking advantage of affordable housing live and work in Bellevue. And now we solve that problem. We solve affordable housing and transportation all in one. And it doesn't make any sense to me that anything affordable is new construction. So that's the one comment. And the one thing I wanted to get to at kind of my last slide. Well, it was glossed over safety, but a lot of what we're talking about in safety is Vision Zero, narrowing lanes, lowering speed limits, all sorts of things that we may do that lower traffic capacity, but we're making this decision now, and the way we're treating all these things is that they're in perpetuity. And so it seems like maybe we need to make those decisions first before we make a lifetime commitment to things. I'm very, just do not understand why we need to incentivize forever everything that we ever incentivize. You know, when I was little, I brushed my teeth and mommy gave me a penny and I put it in the piggy bank. But when I grew up, she stopped doing that because it wasn't something I didn't need an incentive for anymore. I think there's Bellevue's growing up, and there's some need to think about do these things make sense anymore? And by putting, really would like to see us backpedal on this whole making the parking a requirement. I think we're better off leaving it as an incentive. At least then we have some way of sometime phasing it out. But once you make this base FAR and base height, the old maximum, it's gone forever. There's never going to be any taking that back. So the basic problem, though, I wanted to talk about was this a trust issue with, I guess time's up.
All right. If you want to close, please, maybe closing.
Well, mostly the whole thing's incomprehensible. And you can get that one link to a 700-page summary of everything that's happened to this point, and 200-300 pages of it is brand new, and a lot of things are just kind of coming in. You'd be like, God, if this some guy missed this thing where he was fighting the A2, A1 thing all along and he missed this meeting, and like, crap, now he's, you know, things are just happening so fast and changing at the end, and it's so hard to figure any of this out.
That's what I wrote.
Just wanted to understand the challenge or issue with having FAR that's exempt for affordable housing for new construction. It seemed like you were, and I'm not sure I understand the word program. Can you talk about just a little bit more clear about that?
Oh, okay, so once you increase FAR, you're making all this mobility stuff worse. And it doesn't really seem to me to be an appropriate, we shouldn't be getting brand new cars for people who can't afford cars. We shouldn't be getting brand new housing for people who can't afford housing. We should be trying to do something more appropriate and maybe have incentives or tax breaks for people on Bellevue Way or whatever, like the Commodore Apartments or whatever, to make that the affordable housing, and then we can build the luxury housing where they want to build luxury housing. So, but couldn't there be some type of thing? I mean, it works with transportation where the ORCA card comes from the employer and then it encourages transit. It seems like there should be some type of dialogue and that keeps the people off the roads. You know, there's no guarantee if we build affordable housing that these people aren't going to work in rented, and then we got cars on the road. Why not make sure that if we're getting the maximum bang for our buck by getting someone off the road and solving housing?
Assuming they have a car, right? Assuming they don't already take public transportation. I mean,
yeah, right. There's a lot of people who are doing that these days, yeah. But a lot more people are driving. I mean, how many people took public transit here tonight?
On that note, if I may, unless, yes, ma'am.
I have just one more comment on that. Unfortunately or fortunately, we're not filling Montana and have like acres and acres and acres and miles forever land beside us. We have Kirkland, Renton, Redmond. And if you live 1 mile inside Redmond, or you know, one house inside Redmond, you're in Bellevue, and you may be in Bellevue and work in Redmond, but you may be driving like less than anybody else in Bellevue. Just a comment.
Any other public comment? If not, I will put in a motion to adjourn.
Great, so we'll get
that. Second.
Wait, but you got minutes for March 1st and the 8th here.
I have a forum
here, so
right.
I take advantage of this.
Can we put these off until the next meeting? I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. But that's April 19th and March 5th. Yeah, on the website. Sorry, let's
catch up.
Yeah.